sound is.
And we're back in the distillery for another episode of everyone's favorite Ouzo-fueled podcast. Nikolaki, ready and raring to go round again?
Big Bad Tom, mate, I cannot wait. It's my favorite, fortnight session with you. I love it.
I look forward to it too, mate. And look, how good has this season been so far?
Yeah, amazing guests, great food, great drink, and great conversation, mate.
That's what it's all about.
It is, it is. And it seems like our guests are getting bigger and better every time.
I think so too. And as always, we're fortunate to have someone very special joining us, this time from the world of TV and film. We haven't had too many of them, but the ones that we have had have been fantastic, haven't they?
Definitely, but we've got a full-on, blown, legit actor in the house.
I think so too. So should I introduce him?
100%.
Okay, so our guest is a Greek-Australian actor and producer who grew up right here in the Ouzo Talk backyard, Nick. Right here in Sydney, that is. He's played in TV series including American Crime Story, Australian Gangster, Sid 2030, The Making of the Mob, and The Principal. During his young but budding career, he's played the likes of John Travolta in an Olivia Newton-John biopic, and a Capone brother of all things. But it's in his role as John the Apostle in the landmark biblical series The Chosen that most people would know him from, with the show breaking records and inspiring millions of viewers with its depiction of the life and ministry of Christ. I can assure you he's not one of the Beatles, but he is George Harrison Xanthis. Welcome to the Ouzo Talk, mate.
Beautiful. Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
Welcome,
it's great.
George.
Basically in the backyard here. Yeah, it's great.
We are. We are. You're not too far from here, are you?
No. I grew up in Earlwood, which I think is basically Little Greece. Like, it's my grandparents still have a house there. We've moved from Earlwood since, but it's like the Acropolis. It's up on a hill. And there's like the white columns, Corinthian columns and stuff.
Classic.
And it's the old Nick Giannopoulos gag. Yeah. Concrete as far as the eye could see.
We came, we saw, we concreted.
Exactly, yeah, yeah.
It does kind of feel like a homecoming whenever you go down or up Homer Street. It's like, yeah you're in Greece. We're back home again.
And aptly named. I wonder when it was named. Was it named before or after? It was just like, because, Homer, it's
the, actually, you know what? That's Greek the first connection. Time I've thought of that. I didn't think about that.
Well, we were chatting about Homer off screen, but that was the Simpson, not the the Greek poet. But
could be a connection there.
Could be, yes.
Could be.
Probably different. But yeah, it would be interesting to see if anything around Earlwood was named because of his Greek background. But yes, very happy to be here in the backyard.
We might actually get a Homer impression at some point. You know, a bit of Dan Castellaneta come out.
Maybe sometime during the year. During the podcast. Does it sound like you might have no idea?
It does.
Who's that? Where that come from, Tom?
Was that Walter Matthau?
Oh, what is he? I went to the ice cream store. Walter Matthau, what did he do? He's in Dennis the Menace. He's in The Odd Couple.
That's it.
Oddly enough, so Dan, I've seen an interview with Dan Castellaneta where he said when he first created Homer, some of it was based on Walter Matthau.
Oh, right.
But then it evolved afterwards, so it's not really the same thing anymore.
You hear him in the first few seasons. Sorry to sidetrack.
No.
You hear him in the first few seasons and it's like, come here, boy. Yeah. Like, listen to me, boy. You gotta be... And it's like, quite crude and misshapen. And then it's actually how I do voices or impressions of anything. Like, a lot of my characters, as you would have, as you said, are probably borderline impressions of some sort.
Yeah.
So the best thing to do with an impression for me is you look at how they speak. And when I saw Dan Castellaneta, this is great for radio, although you guys have got cameras on as well.
But when I saw him do this with his chin and I saw his mouth and his tongue,
like that's what I'm like, that's how he does Homer. Because I was hearing him do it and I could never do the impression of Homer.
Yeah.
Or as a kid, I'm trying to do Homer Simpson, trying to do all the characters, Chief Wiggum. Same thing with the Hank Azaria characters. Like he explains how he did most Sizzlack, and I didn't quite get it. But when I can see his mouth and his, it's crazy. Like you can just, if you see someone's head, you can probably impersonate them, which got me into a lot of trouble at school. I impersonated a lot of teachers because I would stare at their heads and go, your head is fascinating.
Oh,
it's like that, that Peter, you guys watch Family Guy?
Of course.
Does that, I must draw you. Like he does that see, and then he draws that. It's like with impressions, it's the same. I look at someone like, I must impersonate you. Yeah. You are fascinating. And it's out of love, I want to try and stress.
But it is about sort of honing it. It's a caricature in some ways. It's about figuring out what the unique feature of what they're doing is and exaggerating it to some extent, isn't it?
Absolutely. My So my best friend is currently, we grew up together, you know, we're probably jumping a little bit if I say, you know, okay. I went to school at Newington, although yeah. started off at San Spiridon, but we met together at Newington, and at school we had this dream of like going to Hollywood and, you know, working together, and, you know, we've stayed in touch and been best friends for over 20 years. And now he's my lawyer, you know, he's like working on Wall Street with like some, he was on Wall Street. Now he's in entertainment law. And still to this day, like, we'll be setting up a very important business call with like my managers and stuff. And it's across the states and he's in his office and, you know, I'm in my pajamas because I'm an actor. And my managers are on the other line, but they haven't come in yet. And without fail, we will pull a face and do the voice of our year 8 or year 9 commerce teacher to this day. And it's the face. We just both, it's not just the voice, our faces go crazy. And then we kind of have to like stop laughing. And then official people come into the meeting and we're like, yes, very official here. We're a solicitor and an actor and talking business.
Have they come in halfway through? Like an impression?
We're playing with fire. We play with fire. Sometimes it's, we're like, how close can we do stupid voices? And wow. they just come in. It's like, what is that? What is that sound? And we're just like, nothing. Just a, I don't know. I
think camera's on or off.
Yeah, yeah. We've got to turn the camera off. Mute.
So funny. Yeah. Can actually do Tom? Can you mimic Tom?
Not this soon. Okay, not this soon.
Okay.
Maybe in the future I could.
I look forward to that.
So you look at someone's faces, their chin, their jawline, and you can actually mimic their voice by looking at their structure of their jawline.
Yeah, another great one for me is, and this gets, I did a comedy sketch series and I exclusively got on because of my impressions. So I've been doing it since I was a kid. The first acting memory I have is Robin Williams in Mrs. Doubtfire doing all the voices.
Legend.
He did like, and it's crazy because he wasn't really a voice actor, but in Mrs. Doubtfire, his character is doing all the cartoon voices and all that. You can kind of, yeah, look at a face and definitely get an idea of the person just from that. And I got on Open Slather doing the voices because I've been doing that for ages. And one of the voices that got me on was Bryan Cranston doing, and I didn't actually end up impersonating him on the show. But if you guys have watched Breaking Bad, I'm assuming. 100%. Yeah. And it's just, yeah, looking at someone's face, if you think about Bryan Cranston, the moment here, that's that mouth. He started, Jesse. And just, that's what got it for me. Because once my jaw went down, it kind of, and my mouth was like trying to figure out, it's weird. The voice is part of the character and the character comes from the face. It's getting a little bit too technical. It should just be fun doing voices, but that's how I've always done it. And so, yeah, that really important.
Brilliant. Far out.
Well, I'll tell you what, if you get nothing else out of this podcast, you're probably going to get a good sizzle reel to get a job in voice acting.
I hope so. Knock on wood. I really want to. That's
cartoon voiceovers or something.
Next on the list. I mean, I did. That was the go-to voiceover guy, me and my writing partner, Jay Kagate, on Open Slather. We used to do all the voices and like make fun of the preview guy, the Aussie preview guy, like next week on Channel 9 or whatever it was. But no real voice jobs yet. So I've had a couple, but yeah.
Watch this space.
Absolutely. Any Greek producers out there who need some voiceover.
We do know a few Greeks, me and Tom, don't we?
Well, there's been a few. And I tell you what, we mentioned one, George mentioned one a little bit earlier. Hank Azaria has some Greek heritage as well.
They're the Sephardic Jews who grew up in Thessaloniki. So yeah, no, absolutely. There's the Greeks spread very far, whether it's influence or
opportunity.
Absolutely.
Opportunity.
We're everywhere.
Yeah. Well, look, I mean, that's a good start to what we're about to do. So
yeah.
Nick, should we get into the episode properly? What do you reckon?
I think so, mate. Let's go.
Let's do it. Yamas, paria.
Cheers, mate. Cheers.
Thanks for being here. I mean, given that you play the Apostle John, I mean, it feels like as though you need to start this with a blessing.
Oh, yes. Okay. I played a Greek priest. You guys heard of Alex and Eve?
Yes.
Yeah, I was in that play. I played the bratty high school student.
That was a film first, wasn't it?
It was actually a play first, then it became a film.
Right, okay.
And, you know, as Alex, the creator of the play, quickly found out, I did voices as Robin Williams did in Mrs. Doubtfire.
Yes.
But
was that Richie Branco? Richie Branco?
Yeah, it was, yeah.
Okay, funny.
I've met him before. Yeah.
Sorry to divert, but Richie, I used to play music with Richie Branco.
Oh, wow.
Anyway, sorry.
I hope he remembers me because we were both in Olivia Newton-John together.
Yeah, right. There you go. Sorry to sidetrack.
That's okay. As Alex quickly found out that if an actor ever left, he didn't really necessarily need to recast. He's like, George, can you just put on another costume? And so we had our Greek priest not able to reprise his role. And I took up doing the Greek priest, and I'm not sure how popular that was in church because the show was a comedy and we're going to make, you know, they made fun of everything. And so I just did my best impression of a priest. It's probably a bit sacrilegious.
Given that I know where you went to, you know, we frequent the same church growing up.
Correct, yes.
How much of Father Stephen was in that impression?
Zero. No. I basically just impersonated the last guy. But Father Stephen does a lot of his sermons in English, and as kids, you know, going to school to Saint Spiridon, I understood a lot of what Father Stephen was saying. It's when you go to the, you know, the more ancient churches where they're speaking or ancient Greek. I remember being next to my Yaya Eleni, my great grandmother, growing up,
right?
Oh, wow. And it's like, not even she understood what was being said. I'm like, oh, that Greek is that old.
Yeah.
But the impression that I did was, and I would do the blessing. I there was a scene where I storm in. So basically, not to give up too much of the story, but it's a Lebanese Muslim girl meets a Greek Orthodox man. And the moment the church finds out that the baby might be part Muslim, part Orthodox, in bursts the priest, and he's got the palm leaves, and he's blessing the house. And I was doing the and I was like just doing my best Greek priest impression / impression of all my grandparents that I could.
Get a strongly worded letter from the local priest, the archdiocese.
Tap on the shoulder.
Maybe I've redeemed myself because I'm in the chosen now. I think I've clawed my way back.
Well, before we get to that, what are we drinking first, Nick? Let's start there because we haven't really delved into it. Although we have had a few sips already.
We have, and it's bloody fantastic. It's a it's called Mustic Resin from the Roots brand. Compliments of the Greek Providor.
Crystal,
mate, it's going down a treat. What do you guys think?
Well, I like it.
I really, really like it. It's very refreshing, and it's a perfect compliment to sitting down and chatting, I would say.
There's a plug for you?
You don't think... I'm being honest. It's crazy because it tastes really nice, very sweet, but you don't have to. You don't think about it, you know, and it's... I'm guessing it's an alcoholic beverage of some sort. I'm not thinking about the alcohol.
Sticker from Kiosk, but it's beautiful. It's going down really good for me too.
I think that's the dangerous thing about Mastika. You drink it and a lot of times you don't realize just how much alcohol is in it. It goes down really smoothly.
I promise you, I'm not trying to plug. How do you get this? Because I'm going to the States soon. Can we? Because Mastika, is that that's what we call Mastika?
Mastika, yes.
Mastika with a H.
Yes.
Yeah. Mastika.
So Mastika is from the island of Chios. So it's basically tree sap that they get from the mastic trees.
Oh, wow. On the show, I have introduced Uzo to a lot of the cast.
Really?
And actually, you've given me some merch here.
What brand?
I'm going to flog this merch, if you don't mind, set. Because... two of the biggest characters on the show, Mary Magdalene and Matthew, the apostle.
Yep.
Us three are obsessed with Uzo, and actually Liz, who plays Mary Magdalene, she got me a Vavaryani Uzo.
Because
I made her avgo lemono when she had COVID because all the cast had COVID and I had it and it didn't affect me. Yeah. And I'm like, they're like, what did you do? Like, how did you get it? I was like, oh, I was just drinking avgo lemono, eating avgo lemono. So I made a whole batch. I felt like I was going to everyone's like knocking. And so she was so thankful that she like bought me and my wife this bottle of Vavaryani, which was just
it's the best.
Beautiful.
Do you remember which one it was? The blue,
was it the green,
blue,
the blue,
the blue. One.
Sensational.
Yeah. So I tell you what, this might be the next drink on the list. I think. Shout out to Paris if he ever listens to this. I might tell him to what, because they're in America right now.
Yeah, right.
So we get the American public in on the action. But yeah, I reckon he would love this.
Yeah,
it's really tasty.
Well, Greek Providor. Yeah, .com.au. I think it is.
It is.
deliver. I think it's within Australia.
Within Australia, but yeah,
soon to be the States.
I have to get one and take it with me.
Definitely.
Okay. Well, we can put you in contact with Crystal, and she can sort you out.
Beautiful.
They're only down the road, actually. They're not too far from us.
Oh, great.
They're local too. We're all locals. Yeah. All friends here.
Beautiful.
Definitely. Good on you, Crystal. Yeah. Awesome.
Well, tell us a little bit about your Greek background as well. Where's your family from?
So my mum's side are all Korinthos. So I think that the village is Goura and Basi, I'm pretty sure, are the two villages. But, you know, obviously Peloponnese and, you know, extended family in Athens, but that's where my mum's side are from. Sure. Mm-hmm. And then my dad's side, my dad's mum, Mayeya Marula, is from Akrata, which is a beautiful, beautiful little town, village on the water, which has the rock beaches. Yeah. And then my dad's dad is from Kastelorizo, which is on the other side of the planet, basically, near Mars and Jupiter. So Kazi. So I am part Kazi. And that's probably the part that anytime I mention that, everyone's ears prick up because they're like, whoa, Kazi, it's so far away. So we definitely feel an affinity towards the Kastelorizhian island, Megisti. And, you know, we've inherited a small little property on Kazi. It was half bombed as a result of some unfortunate events. But we've redone it back up. It was
fantastic.
My great-grandfather's property. And property there is dirt cheap. I'm part of tourism, Kastelorizo, by the way. So I'm here. Yeah, you can buy property for like €15,000.
Now there you go. Another little plug.
Another plug. But it's honestly it's like an untapped gem, Kastelorizo. Yeah, I heard the royal family went to the St. George Island, which is near Kastelorizo. Literally, still I think it's still part of it. But yeah, amazing place. And I went as part of my honeymoon last year with my with my wife. So yeah, it's
good lovely. On you.
But all the places are great. I should say that because all four of my grandparents will get me into trouble if I don't mention each and every one of them.
Classic. Yeah, well, we've got so many Kazis here and they all talk about how great the island is.
Mm.
But the Kithirians think their island's better though, don't they, Tom?
Well, they're the two mafias, aren't they? Yeah, it's Kazi and the Kithirians.
They've got the jokes. There was a great joke. I can't remember what the joke was. I actually told the joke to get a job at Rebel Sport. And like the boss was like David Brent from The Office. He didn't know how funny he was being, but he was really serious. He'd come around and he'd be like, I don't really care. You know, like arms crossed. He's like, I don't really care about, you know, you guys can muck around if you want. Don't muck around. You know, it's like, what? I remember telling the joke and he just didn't laugh.
Yeah.
And it didn't really land. It was something like, you know, who should you never trust? Some stupid. Basically, you can insert two people who don't like each other.
Interchangeably.
And I just said, Kazi's. And he goes, George, that was really funny. I'm going to hire you today. I was like, you're weird, man.
But,
good old Rebel Sport.
Yeah, Rebel Sport.
Did you ever have a stint there?
No.
I did.
I've been there heaps of times, but no, I never
footwear?
Worked there.
Did you go to footwear?
Footwear, yes.
Bucket loads of commission.
Nah, they'd gotten rid of commission by the time I was there. Yeah,
really?
Yeah.
When were you there?
When was it? Between 2003 to 2006.
Oh, then they introduced it, perhaps.
Maybe.
Yeah, they introduced it because too many Rebel Sport people were probably slackening off, and so they're like, we're going to give it.
But the key was, I found the key was, if you're in footwear, but something like the World Cup was on, you just casually move over to licensed clothing and start making money there.
Well, that's what, I mean, I just fell into footwear because this guy was like, this guy told a great joke, he's now in footwear. And it's like, you need the most training for footwear.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, I'm coming in, I think you need to make 3 sales an hour to get your commission. Oh, and I'm selling 3 Kayano shoes for $280 a pop. Yeah. Meanwhile, you know, Dave in equipment has sold like 80 cricket balls for a combined total of $103.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, clean. It's not fair. I don't know how I landed that, but yeah, thanks to that boss.
You missed out not ever working at Rebel.
Sounds good fun. Good.
Best job ever.
Yeah.
They paid like $25 an hour when I was there.
Yeah.
Crazy. Ridiculous. Americans would hear this and be like, you're kidding.
I could live off that in the US. You could buy a house.
Yeah.
And
exactly.
Classic. We used to go all the time. We used to drive mad, though, with my kids.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, can we grab that? The poor bloke's coming out with like 5 shoe boxes and we're picking them. No, take that back. We want that one out. Do you have a different size?
And the boys are kicking balls around everywhere.
And meanwhile, balls are hitting in the head.
The back footwear area is a prime hangover recovery location.
Okay. Hang on, which one are we talking about here? Broadway.
Okay. Rebel. Someone comes in. Oh, East Gardens. Yeah. Okay. Someone asked for a Kayano, and it's like the most popular shoe, most popular expensive shoe. And I've got to check in the back.
Yeah.
I'm extremely hungover. I'm just going to check in the back to see if we've got any.
Flashbacks, by the way.
I just go in the back. There is a roast chicken in the back because my colleague is also hungover. So we've split a $6 Woolworths chicken. It's in the back. And I just put my head into my hands and I'm like, and he's like, what's wrong? I go, I'm just going to go look for a Kayano. He's like, they're just here. I go, I know. It's going to take a good 5 minutes. And literally after 5 minutes, take the Kayano, go back and say, hey, it was at the back somewhere. I couldn't find it.
I needed a forklift and
All the good old tricks of the tray coming out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Long story short, use the Catherian Castellarisian joke. And yes, they, for some
get
reason.
Hired.
Yeah, for some reason, they're, yeah, those two islands just know each other so well. But
yep.
I've heard of Githira outside of those conversations. I don't mean to say this against my Castellarisian heritage, but Githira has got to be the correct answer in terms of it is physically a bigger, like it's a more prominent island. It's in history, in like Greek mythology as well.
Yeah.
I play a video game, what's it called? Assassin's Creed Odyssey. Yep. You can travel to Githira, and I'm like, I think they won. They won that argument.
Isn't it funny though? Like Castellorizo is such a small island. And I've heard, I don't know if this is true or not. Someone said it's like the size of Centennial Park here in Sydney, and that yet there's so many people here, you know, that have heritage from that island. It's unbelievable.
It's a proximity to Turkey, I assume. It was
spitting
one of
distance.
It's impacted in the First World War quite significantly. Mm. It's you know decimated, and so I'm assuming it's,
and it was Venetian controlled. It only came back to Greece some stage, in 1901 or something like that. Late.
It's like a lot of the islands. It's probably had a lot of different change of ownership, but I'm assuming because of that First World War. That's how my great grandfather came here. I think I'm almost certain I'm telling the story right. He hitched a ride with Anzacs to come back to to Australia. You know, I think Castellorizo, like a lot of Greek islands, were you know bases and little halfway points in the First World War. So yeah, that's the story I've been told, is that they've hitched a ride back.
Yeah,
you could do worse than hitch a ride with those blokes back then, eh?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I remember Yanni was telling us, Malikourtis.
Yeah, Greek Consul General.
Yeah, we had him in one of our episodes and he said anyone from Castellorizo, it was very challenging to get a Greek passport because there was no documentation and it went to Greek hands in 1901 officially.
Right.
So if you don't have a Greek passport, I'd suggest get through your mum's side because it's very challenging from the Kazi side to get a Greek passport.
I have a Greek passport, but it's expired and I tried to renew it and they said you have to wait like 6 months to renew it.
Mm.
And that defeats the purpose of like having the passport if it takes me 6 months to renew
it. Would you use it though?
I used it on my honeymoon, so I want to use it now again if I was ever to travel to Greece this year, and now I can't.
But is it just as good as an Australian going into Greece, Australian passport?
I don't know. Look, there's a little bit of... It's a little bit easier. You just get to go in the European
They
section.
Wave you through, basically.
Yeah. And we've worked the hard thing, like the, you know, the military and all that, military waiver. And I've been also stopped at a gate and been asked, why have you not done your military service? I'm like, I thought I didn't have to. I'm Australian.
Yeah. It's 3 months, I think.
6 months.
6 months now.
Well, if you've got the waiver, it's 6 months.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So I think it's 30 days if you don't have the waiver.
Yeah.
I didn't do it.
Go back to episode 1 of season 2. And Yanni will tell you.
All I heard was the age limit, and I'm definitely above it, so I don't have to care anymore.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So what is your connection to Greece now? Obviously, you went back for your honeymoon. Mm-hmm. Do you have a connection with it prior to that? Did you go with family all the time?
Yeah. The first time we went was when I was 6. It felt like when we went to like the villages where our respective families' villages, especially my mum's side in Corinth, those areas, it felt like we were going back in time. We felt like we're in a different decade. This was during the 90s. I remember going on, I swear I went on a plane and an Olympic Airways plane where people were smoking on the plane. I swear I remember that.
You're opening a can of worms here again.
You can legitimately, like, people were using the ashtrays, like the cigarettes in the ashtray. But yeah, it was great. We actually spent an extended period of time there, and I feel like I hear a lot of, you know, I don't know if you guys do the same. You just search Greek celebrity interviews and just want to hear them say anything about Greece.
Yep.
I think Jennifer Aniston was like on Jay Leno when she was like 24. She's like, "Yeah, I spent some time in Greece." And she's like, "Oh, you went to Greece, is that right?" My best Jay Leno impression.
Telly Savalas is good as well.
Telly Savalas, and that's
his interviews.
And that's Jennifer Aniston's Nonno.
Yes, yeah. Correct.
But yeah, like I think it must be like a rite of passage for a lot of, you know, at least the Greek actors. I hope I join their rank of prestige one day.
You're well on your way, I think.
Done good so far.
Bucks you lost.
Yeah, there we go. But yeah, like that was important. Like somewhere in the back, I can speak Greek very well. In the back of my head, I have a good accent. You heard from my little yeah impression that I did before. But my vocabulary is pretty poor. So once I actually spent some time in Greece about 9 years ago. At the time, my wife, now girlfriend at the time, we visited the same family, like, you know, a couple of decades later, or not even, maybe 15 years later. And after spending like 3 days in Athens with my cousins, I was speaking like fluent Greek.
Yeah.
Wow. I remember being at a nightclub.
It and makes like, such a difference, doesn't it?
Having a conversation in Greek, it was crazy. It is back there.
Yeah.
There's something there where I can speak, which is good. It was good to know. So I've been those two times. Went when I was about 14, the year that Greece won the Euro.
Oh wow!
So I don't even know how. 2004 or so. That was great. We actually watched an England game in Castellorizo. They brought down a screen. We're in like the little town centre, which is size Centennial Park's probably way bigger than Cassie. Then I actually went on to Switzerland when Greece played Portugal in the final, and Greece won. And Switzerland were in. Were we in Geneva? I feel like we were in Geneva. It was Greeks came out of everywhere.
Yeah.
And they closed roads because the Greeks were marching through the streets in with all the flags. And I mean, I was on like this weird school history sport trip kind of thing where the school got a really good deal. And if like students wanted to take advantage of this travel agent deal. So we went with my parents, but took the deal from school. And so went to Greece and kind of met up with the, you know, this history and languages kind of, it's like a,
how good's that?
It acted like, you know, you learn about language, you learn about history. So it was kind of schoolish. But yeah, that was good to not only visit Greece, but watch Greece win in Europe.
I think you're the first Australian I've met who wasn't in Brighton the day that we won the Euro. Everyone we've spoken to was here.
Yeah. I know, right? I saw, you know, footage of it afterwards back then. We didn't know what was going on in Australia. But I do remember day one of the Euro.
Yeah.
Robbie Slater, who at the time was a football, he was about to become head of football at my school at Newington. Mm. He said it was Portugal versus Greece opening game. And he goes, I think he predicted 5-0 to Portugal.
Really?
And a lot of my friends are Portuguese, and they were just like rubbing it in going, Greece is going to get smacked. And then I can remember the first goal scorer should have been, I think, Kalagounis may have scored. Was it from long range?
Yeah.
He was like bobbled on the floor. And we scored a second. Was it a pen? Basinas, was it?
Basinas, yeah.
I can't remember. But they scored back.
It was 2-1.
It was 2-1. They score. I think we're 2-0 up.
We went 2-0 up.
Yeah.
We need to refresh.
Yeah, we should do a whole episode. I can remember it like it was yesterday.
We are planning on it.
Do a whole relive the whole thing.
Yeah. You're not the first person to say that. We've got to do a whole episode on it.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And so, yeah, that was great, especially to hear the Aussie pundits going, Greece are going to get smacked, and they win 2-1. I think they draw against... It's crazy. They draw against Spain, and then they lose against Russia.
Yeah.
And they get through.
In fairness to Robbie Slater, like, who would have expected that? No one expected that to happen.
No. It was,
he did well just to make it.
Well,
We grew up in Earlwood near the KFC and the Greek record bar, GRB. Yes. And that guy just got, like... the entire world's supply of Greek, like blue parker jackets with the Euro 2004 champions. I think my dad still has it. Typical Greek Australian dad is keeping. He holds on to anything that is that he's picked up from, you know, like I feel really bad now. Like Commonwealth Bank slippers and stuff like that.
Mate, you did very well. So Gattaguni scored in the 7th minute and Vasinas penalty in the 51st.
There you go.
Very good.
And Ronaldo scored in the 90th minute.
Ronaldo.
So right at the end. So we made Ronaldo cry twice in one tournament.
Correct.
The Greeks. How good's that?
It's very good.
Not many people can say that.
No. Yes.
Here's to Euro 2004. Yeah, still.
Absolutely. Opa,
nearly 20 years later. We're going to be living off that one for
a while. That's all we're going to talk about, the day we die.
I literally bring it up whenever I can.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
Why wouldn't you? Like, it's still, it is still one of those moments. Oh, that and the Olympics, particularly that opening ceremony, are like the two things that people dine out on. The Greeks are just like, that was a huge moment for us, and that's an example of who we really are. Getting all patriotic there.
It is. Yeah, it's well also, it's it was the 300 Spartans. That's kind of Greece's journey throughout Euro 2004. We may look weaker on paper as the story of the 300 Spartans go. There's only 300 of them, but we're going to just use what we can to our advantage.
Correct.
And, you know, to an extent, you know, when you win one, lose one, draw one in your group stage, you haven't exactly...
True.
Cannoned your way to victory. You have found a way to survive and make an impact.
Yep.
That's
all we needed, though.
Absolutely.
Yeah. That's all we needed.
Oh, that's it. And we still talk about it. How many years later?
I know.
Like I said, nearly 20th year anniversary.
Yeah,
next year.
Definitely. We should do an episode on that, Tom. I know you keep on telling me.
Yeah, definitely. So, why acting? What made you get into acting?
Talking about the stuff we were talking about before with the whole faces. I sometimes make this connection, and sometimes it's more poignant than in other times. And so right now it does feel poignant, especially we're talking about caricatures and faces. I used to sketch a lot. And so there's a degree of mimicry going on there and capturing someone's essence in a drawing. And I would actually at school, especially if a teacher really frustrated me, I would draw caricatures of them. And when I would show the caricature, I would like do a voice to fit the caricature. But the voice came from the face that was on there. And so this poor teacher, I'm going to name him, shame him. His name was Mr. Robson. He used to get me in trouble all the time. I hardly did anything wrong. I was a pretty good student.
Yeah.
Like, but he would just, make me write out what was called the Ten Commandments, which is like, you know, thou shalt not litter.
Yeah.
So I remember doing a drawing of him, an impression of him, but I've been drawing, like sketching my whole life. And I'm just wondering if there was a connection between I need to sketch someone's face and I'm copying it. I'm getting a mental image of it. And then, if I'm doing a voice or mimicry, I'm taking a mental snapshot and drawing it on my own face. And my face is now a drawing kind of thing. So it's art no matter which way you look at it. So I'm guessing I've been told by my yaya loves to tell this story about how I used to sketch the kitchen and when I was a kid and stuff. So I'm guessing that desire to just copy things may have been the start of my interest in acting. And then when I watched something like Mrs. Doubtfire, my two idols growing up, I would say, I had a lot like whatever you call it, throughout. But I would say the main two is Robin Williams and Jim Carrey.
I knew you were going to say that.
Yeah, right?
I knew you were going to say Jim Carrey.
The voiceover.
And so Jim Carrey's the elastic face and Robin Williams is the elastic voice. I mean, both of them do bits and pieces. I just used to think that those two, they must be like the most well-known.
Yeah.
Like it was crazy. Great, great era to kind of watch films and whatnot.
Both of those guys are just on another level when it comes to...
Yeah.
Well, I mean, talk about the elastic face. He, you know, Jim Carrey does become fucking Clint Eastwood.
Yeah,
he does that Clint Eastwood impression.
Yeah.
You know.
Did you end up doing drama at school? How did you get into it officially?
Well, I mean, I would say that at a young age, like 5 years old, 4, 5, 6, I'm watching The Mask and very early on realized that, oh, that's actually Jim Carrey's face. The green has been painted on his face. I used to think that it's not him. Mixing that with Mrs. Doubtfire with the I do voices scene that Robin Williams goes through about 20 of them. That's me going, that's probably when I decided, like, that's what I want to do. I want to be that person. I don't know if that's an actor. I want to do the voices. That's kind of what I want to do, the impressions, the copying. And then, funnily enough, at school, I never did any kind of drama until I forced it on myself. I would try out for plays, could never get into the plays. I was like, It was usually... Wow. I don't know. It was usual suspects, perhaps, that were, you know, in the plays. I don't know. But I went and studied drama for, like, because I'm like, if I'm not going to get into the plays, I'm going to do the subject and I'm going to act my own things, you know. And I did drama in year 9 and I scored the highest mark you could. It was 59.5 out of 60. I don't know what that even means, but it was a combination of my performance and theory. So I clearly, was good at it. And I continued that into year 10 and, you know, was, topping it at least from a theoretical and school standpoint, but I could just never do like the plays at school. I never got into them. I don't know what. Yeah, just never really happened for me. And I didn't continue drama at school. It didn't scale well.
Yeah.
As a good Greek boy at school, like, don't do those
don't
dumb...
Do drama, don't, music, and art.
Don't do the dumb subjects, essentially.
Physics, chemistry.
I did do physics, and I dropped it, but it was fascinating. I've kept my physics knowledge, and I've continued to read about physics. I love it. But, yeah, then I basically just knuckled down at school. And I took acting back up. My parents have been so supportive, but they did, you know, they gave me some good advice, you know, get through school. And then once you're out of school, then let's do, like, see what you want to do with drama. And then, yeah, I started taking classes. I did Alex and Eve, which was fantastic when I was 19. It was more of something I did after school, I would say.
Okay, so it was like a hobby, would you say, and then ends up into something a bit more serious, or you really wanted to be an actor?
It's sound advice that they gave you, though.
Very good. Really? And it also taught me to, I applied the knowledge I got from school, I applied to my acting life. So, you know, being diligent. Uni, as much as I went to uni, I went to University of Sydney, got a really good UAI at school, qualified for a very good degree, and completed the degree in finance and accounting. But at the end of the day, uni does teach you to sit still. Sit in a room and focus. Sit still and think about something for 3 hours. Can you do that and then write about it? That is helpful when you're an actor, because some actors kind of get a little bit annoyed and a little bit kind of like antsy, and they kind of don't know what to do with their hands a little bit. And it's taught me to persist. And also that degree, doing that degree, working two jobs, also doing Alex and Eve as a theatre production, which is community theatre, mixing that in with a double degree of commerce and arts. Yeah, it taught me hard work and persistence. There's nothing in this industry that it'll throw at me that I'll think I'm going to give up. So, best advice I can give to any budding aspiring actor is try and do it all, because it's a tough industry and you've got to be able to deal with... Like I did. I was 20, did not get my first TV gig until I was 25.
Oh, wow.
Five years. I mean, when you're 20, that's a long time. It's like a quarter of your life almost, or a fifth of your life by the time you're 25 of, no professional work.
And was that full of auditions and getting knocked back? How was that process?
100%. Loads of auditions, loads of getting knocked back, loads of misunderstandings. My old agent, I'm not going to say his name. that would be mean. Yeah. There was some misunderstandings. I remember once I got like a callback for something and he said, can you do the audition at this time? And I said, oh, I have an exam for uni on that day. Can I do it a different time? And then he never got back to me. And then like, two, three days later, he's like, oh, I passed on it because you said you weren't available. I'm like, no, I just said I had an exam on that time. And so like a little bit of misfortune and, you know, it's always make your own luck.
Yeah.
Just
sure there was a lot of lessons learned in that 5 years.
100%. Yeah. I wouldn't say don't go to your exam, kids. No, go to the exam. That's important. Yeah. But it also teaches you like it's taking responsibility is a huge thing, I would say as well. For an actor, always take responsibility. It's something you're doing, and even if someone else got a role because of you, it's not someone else's fault. It's okay, let's look at what I could do better, or let's look at what they're doing well. Keep it positive, you know.
Yeah.
I remember being very cynical about actors like Channing Tatum. Oh, he's just a good body and all he can do is like dance. Can you dance, George? Do you have a good body? And at the time I would say no. And it's like, well, those are skills. Can you be Magic Mike? Yeah, and he wrote that himself, by the way. Yeah. So I newfound respect for all performers of any creed, you know, even go as far as saying the Kardashians, you know, there is some, I know, no, but there's some skill there. Just learn it and move on and take those lessons. Exactly.
You don't accumulate that wealth from not being good at something.
100%.
Correct. They're definitely doing something right. They're entrepreneurs of some sort. Yeah.
I was going to say, so how do you prepare some of these auditions? Tell us a little bit how it all works. Is it like a resume? Do you walk in? Do you have a script? Do you sit there and cry in front of them? Like, how
it's
does it
interesting.
All work?
It's gotten different. Sorry, my I'm wearing a Liverpool jersey for those who aren't watching the video version. And my Firmino
nothing
name.
Nothing wrong with that.
Sorry,
there's nothing wrong with that, mate.
Nothing
absolutely
wrong with that.
You're welcome here.
But if you ever hear,
or at least this half of the house, the other half is my son, as you know, United. So
the other half, it's tough to count. I mean, that's a lot of numbers to count.
That's just poor parenting, Nick. Come on.
I don't know where I went wrong.
Child abuse.
I don't know what I would do if one of my kids was Man United, which wouldn't...
I got one Liverpool. I got one, right?
That's great. That is fantastic.
Yeah, 50%. You're going okay.
But yeah, look, with the audition scape has actually changed a lot. And a lot of it will be very intriguing and interesting to some people, even budding actors. I would love to, you know, instruct and mentor actors. Mm. I've got someone myself, Les Chantry, if you guys have heard, is an incredible Australian actor. Now I would argue one of the best acting teachers, probably on the planet. Like, it is world renowned now. Just came out with a book. He was a mentor for me, and I've always been like, oh, I would love to do that for an actor, you know, up and coming, because the landscape has changed that much. I'll give you an idea with auditions, for example. I was chatting to your sons earlier. Mm. I might get an audition on a Wednesday, and then they're like, Thursday it's due, Thursday 9 a.m, and we need a nine page script. It's got three scenes in it, three page scenes, or maybe a four page and a five page. You got to learn that within the day, and you either need to go into the room and you can test in front of someone. And Australia and America are completely different beasts.
Really?
In Australia, I mean, it's a much smaller pool of actors. Mm. So I've been lucky enough to work in Australia. There's actors who aren't that lucky, so I've been very lucky to be able to work here. But you go in and they're like, oh, great to see you, and you sit down and they put the camera on you and you read it and you do it a certain way. And a lot of actors are very nervous there. I would stress, you don't need to be nervous. Yeah, that's the best. That's how you book the job, is you're not nervous and you don't want the job, to quote Bryan Cranston. But there's that way. Then you go to America. Now, the talent pool is much larger. So when you go to America, I'm sitting down, I get ready, and I'm waiting for them to turn the camera on. I'm like, oh, so where's the camera? They go, oh, no, there's no camera. Oh. And he's just like, just perform there. And he's sitting on a couch. And I'm like, is there a chair? Because it says I'm sitting. They're like, no, don't do it with a chair. That's fine. And so now I'm just performing in front of someone's face. And so he's like, okay, cool. Thanks so much for coming in. And that's like, with America, you have to earn the right to even audition on the camera. Like, they just see you as a first lot. It's just like, are you even worth our time? Like, are you worth our SD card space?
Really?
Basically.
Wow.
So that's kind of, you know, and those can be, you know, auditions. You could get 2-3 days notice. It could be the next day. America's very cutthroat. It's usually the next day. Australia, you probably get 3 or 4 days notice, which is good. You can work with the scene. But now, because of, I mean, Australians have always had to do this. This is the difference. You go in the room you tape. And so now, I mean, COVID kind of, I think casting directors were like, we wouldn't mind them taping. You know, where are they? They're a bit further away, especially Australians need to tape a lot. Mm-hmm. But as soon as COVID hit, I think it was just the excuse for casting directors to just say, oh, no, it's COVID. We've got to be COVID safe. And so you need to be pre-recorded. So now every actor has this. We've got looking at the setup in your room. We've got, you put a tripod, you put your phone in a tripod. Mm-hmm. You've got to have a microphone like this somewhere. You've got to have a light. And there's some times where, let's just pretend you guys aren't here. I will set this whole thing up. And if I don't have like my wife there, I was living in America alone because she didn't have a green card.
Yeah.
I would do this. I would perform to myself.
Yeah.
And so I'm auditioning and there's no actor on the other side. So I would be like, you know, so what's going on? Like, what are you doing? Oh yeah, cool. Okay, so I'll meet you next door. Great, cool. And I'm like talking to nobody. And then in post, I would record, I need you to come to my house tomorrow, like in some weird voice or whatever. And so in the audition, like my managers would watch it and go like, oh, that's really good. Like, did you manage to find a reader? I was like, no, did it by myself.
Yeah.
I recorded both parts. I had to wait for myself in my head. useless trivia, you speak way quicker in your head than what you do out your mouth.
Definitely.
True.
There's some times where I didn't give myself enough time, but it was such a good take, and I'm like, I'm going to have to race through the lines. So I'd be like, I've got to meet you next door, quick. And then my on-screen version would catch up. But that's kind of remained. So now the audition, the standard audition procedure is I get 9 pages. They say it's due on within 48 hours. Put yourself on tape and good luck.
Well, that's interesting.
That's auditioning.
Because when it comes to that, I mean, when you're, if you're able to be the master of your own destiny and be able to manipulate the timings and have access to editing, that kind of stuff, surely that gives you a slight advantage when it comes to that. Aside from taking away the idea that you might not be right for the role look wise and whatnot, it must be an advantage nowadays if you can do a little bit of editing to, you know, to get along.
Oh, absolutely. And that's why it's come full circle when I was talking about, you know, have as many skill sets as you can. Mm-hmm. Like it serves you very well, but at the same time, I have a huge sense of humor about the whole thing. You know, if I have recorded and it is just with myself, I haven't found a reader, I might even just say it like at the end of the tape and just be like, I hope you guys enjoy like me talking to myself because I'm that much I'm that much of a loner that no one will tape with me. And you do that, you have fun with your, they call it a slate at the end of your audition. You have to say, my name is George, I am 5'9" and I do this, whatever. I'm from here, I'm with this agency. Those, I record all types of dumb stuff and I'll do dumb faces. And a friend of mine, she insists she got booked, I think, I don't know if she was for Supergirl. There's some CW series. But she says, I got booked once based off my slate. And it's important for actors to know that. Like, just have fun and,
I remember a rugby league coach telling one of my mates who was trialing for a representative team, make sure you wear something that makes you stand out. So wear yellow socks or wear like a piece of tape around your headgear or something like that. Something that differentiates you.
It's
kind of the same principle, isn't it?
It's like, we liked, you just can't say we like number three. Like, where's number three? It's like, we like the guy with the pink shoes or something like that, or the pink boots. Yeah. And it's like, that's actually a good point.
Because you blend in with all the other players.
Exactly.
You see the yellow socks everywhere. Oh, okay, you're busy. Who is he? Makes sense.
But it's
fantastic. So. Yeah. So Australians, are they seen in high demand in the US, do you think? Do you think we've got something good here, or are we just like everyone else?
I mean, it could, you know, it get a little bit theoretical now, but our accent, so I'm obsessed with, as you can probably tell, obsessed with accents and how people's voices work. And, you know, I don't know how much official study I've done on it, but I can do the American accent based off just impression and mimicry. But I did do some workshops, and I just wanted to, things that I was doing, I wanted to understand why I was doing it. And there were some things maybe I wasn't doing that I could understand. And you learn a history of what each accent, where it comes from. And, you know, I don't know if this plays a part. I think there is something about the Australian laid-back nature that could be sellable. But at the base of it, we're quite malleable in terms of our accent. It's a very weak accent. You know, this is the theoretical thing that I'm talking about. If you're hiring an Aussie, you can pretty much mold them to do anything, I'm pretty sure. Our accent is surprisingly weak, even though it sounds really strong. Like, if you get a really strong Aussie accent, I think it is hard to work with. But by and large, I think we use a lot of our nasal. You know, I think you guys can do the exercise with me. We're doing warm-up exercises, weren't we? I should have got the Anchorman one. I actually had it on my phone.
That's what we were looking for.
What is it? Oh, yeah. Unique New York. Yeah. A tarantula enjoys fine chewing gum. Yeah. The arsonist has oddly shaped feet.
The arsonist, that's the one.
Human Torch was denied a bank loan. Now, Bronco?
Well, I just had images of you, Tom, driving here, doing your tongue and chin exercise that you were showing me before in the car on your own. And they go, look at this weirdo.
In fairness, they're for singing. They're not for, for this. But anyway.
But anyway, like, as an exercise for an Australian, if you were to not move your mouth, you could probably actually speak really, really well. I'm not moving my mouth that much, my jaw not that much, and I can actually have I sound a little bit more Aussie than usual. You try and do the same thing as an American, you need to use your entire jaw. So it's kind of like there's a lot more that goes into the American accent, a lot of warm air, a lot of deep jaws, a lot of round vowels. And
okay,
if you think about the Australian accent going into the theory a little bit, it's a, you know, don't want to use the wrong word, bastardization of a whole bunch of English accents. So if you think about where the accent came from, it's how do I speak to you as quick as possible?
Mm.
You're a Cockney and you're a Liverpudlian and you're someone from London.
Mm.
We're going to come up with something that, and they're all, you know, the original convicts that came here, probably lower class. They just need to talk really, really quickly. Mm. So our accent is kind of weaker. And so that's why, you know, you hear Aussies going to America and you hear their accents kind of leaving a little bit, like Cate Blanchett and, well, not Cate Blanchett, I think she keeps it, but Nicole Kidman's has kind of disappeared a little
actually,
bit.
Actually, Nicole's has, yeah.
You know, right. And I find it sometimes, I love to say that I would never lose my accent, and my brother always makes fun of me if I do anything that's American. But you physically, like I'm in line in an American, like for like a coffee or something. And they're like, who's the coffee for? And I'm just like, George. And they're like, okay, Josh. I'm like, no, George.
Yeah.
George? I'm like, George. I'm like, oh, George, okay.
Okay.
And so now I'm like, it's second nature. I'll say, George. I'm not going to bugger around with that whole song and dance again.
Can't be bothered.
What would you like? What would you like, sir? Just get a beer, please. A what? A bee? A beer.
Yeah.
A bee?
Yeah.
A beer. And it's just like, oh, okay, a beer. So now I'm just like, two beers, please. I'm not going to, you know, bugger around again.
Sound every letter out, do you?
Yeah. You can see how weak the accent is. It's gone immediately. We can kind of get rid of it.
I saw a documentary that was saying the reason why we talk with our mouth closed is to keep the flies out, was one version.
Could have been.
And the other, or back in, you know.
It's an evolutionary trait now.
Yeah. And the other one was we're always drunk.
Yeah.
And we shorten our words.
I can't talk right now. Yeah. I'm hungover.
You just reminded me of a story. I was in Germany. There were two American girls standing next to me, and I said something like, you know, how's it going or something like that. She's like, what? I'm like, how's it going? And she's like, sorry, how's it going? She turns to her friend. She's like, what language is that?
They don't say, how are you going?
Yeah.
I realized that maybe in the last 24 months, maybe 12 to 24 months. There's a lot of stuff I say on set in America. Yeah. You know, like I think one of them, I said oath to something.
Yeah.
I went like, I mean,
can oath.
Can oath or oath, mate, or like bloody oath.
Yeah.
They don't know what that means. Cotton on was a huge one. Yeah. I went like, oh, it's just something, I haven't cottoned on to it yet.
Yeah.
They go, what?
Do you use fair dinkum as well?
I don't go that far. With like screwing around with my mates at school, I think we used to just pretend say fair dinkum because it just made us, it was like funny.
Yeah.
But for that regard with the accent, there could be a degree to which like if they manage to find the next Hugh Jackman or Cate Blanchett, you do have someone who can give you American, but then give you British.
Mm.
A lot of Americans can't go into British that easily.
Yeah.
Some can, but yeah, an Australian can kind of give you that massive swing between the two. So there could be a demand for Australians in that regard. We've just had Murray Bartlett explode, who's from White Lotus.
Yep.
He was in, no spoilers, but he was in Last of Us, which is a fantastic TV series. So yeah, I don't know what it is about the Aussies. I think there is also a maybe they do see all these things like, oh, when we hire this Australian, when they're doing like a press junket and the Australian accent comes out, is that something we're taking into consideration? Like, surely not when they're casting a character, but maybe it does.
Yeah.
So there could be a demand.
Yeah. So how important is it having an accent?
Well, that's, it's so kind
in
of...
In your roles, do you have to have a certain accent when you're acting?
Yeah, well, for me, I've got to put on American accents, and I'll do a shameless plug here.
So they tell you that, don't they? So you're going to have an American accent.
I went for a role. It was on a show called We Crashed. It was an Apple series.
Yeah.
And it was incredible. And I learned so much from that. And I actually spent a couple of weeks with Jared Leto.
Yeah.
And I was exclusively just in scenes with him. And he's very method.
Wow.
And it's kind of like they warned me about it. Warned not in like in a bad way. They're just like, Jared, like, or they called him Adam because his character was Adam. Mm. Like, Adam likes to stay in character. And, you know, if Adam does want to be Jared, you know, he'll chat to you. And I'm just like, I will respect his process. He's an Academy Award winning actor. So, you know, but there would be times where we're doing the scenes and he'll always be an accent. But I wanted to do the same thing. So he'd be like, he was Israeli. So he'd come and was like, we're doing the scene later, but maybe if you want to do some improv beforehand, we could do the improv. And I'm just like, yeah, absolutely. That could be really cool. Yeah. Let's do the improv beforehand. Like, yeah, that's cool. And he's like, okay.
And it's Stavros. But George, right? Like, he, you know, yeah, that's breaking the character. He did want to connect a little bit. I kind of felt like I was breaking through with this.
I was going to say, how do you ever connect in a scenario like that?
He knows there's a clear, like, stature difference here in terms of, you know.
Because you hear some stories about people, you know, being completely method and it's like, dude, don't fuck with that process. Don't even look at him, kind of thing.
I thought he was lovely. I think considering how heavy he's in the method, and he's an Academy Award winning actor, I thought he was very lovely with it all. Very, like, and people were screwing up, like, at times with, you know, the scene and he kept his cool as well. Like, I'm thinking, especially method, someone like Christian Bale is going to explode or something like that. But he didn't know. Like, when something went wrong, he's just like, we just need to go back and we need to do that. But anyway, I would always answer him, like, because I'm like, we in character now? So I just stayed the same way. Like, okay.
Yeah.
And he's like, I might take this elastic band. And everything we were chatting about in character. Anyway, when the 2 weeks were up, I obviously got the role based on, I'm a New York Greek American real estate agent from Queens, from Astoria. Mm-hmm. So I did that accent, and so that's what it required. So Australian accent in real life, American accent on the show. Anyway, so I kept in character the entire time. And then after the 2 weeks, he came up, you know, Adam, and he still wanted to stay, well, Jared stayed in his character. He's like, it's really good work, man. Really great. I'm just like, oh, cheers, mate. Really, really great working with you. And he's like, what happened? And he just stopped. And I'm just like, and he goes, you're a, what's accent? What's that? And I go, oh, I'm Australian. He goes, not American. And I go, no. And he's like, and I might have stuffed him up for the rest of the day because he was like, do I go in character now? Do I? It was like it was a compliment to me because he didn't know what my accent was.
That is brilliant. That's
fantastic. Yeah. And he's just like, is it okay? So. And another shameless name drop. I feel really like a prick to drop it out there. I did the same thing with, because I wanted to be in character and stuff. I did the same thing on American Crime Story, and it was with Edie Falco this time. And after the scene was done, I was constantly just doing the accent because some people in the room were in character. She wasn't. She was just like so much fun and really loud and kind of like. But then at the end, I just went, oh, yeah, cheers, thanks. That scene was really good. She's like, oh, my God, you're Australian. I had no idea. I once went to Sydney. And then she's like, you know, didn't mean to impersonate her like that. Yeah. But, yeah, like it happens a lot for an Australian or an English actor. Mm. It would probably help to be in the accent the entire time because you don't want to. There's a really lovely video, actually, of Tom Holland in Spider-Man, whose accent is flawless, by the way. Incredible American accent. But
he's very good too.
I think he says, I don't know. I think the scene is him saying, you know, I want to go with my grandma. Like something about, I think it was his grandma. And he goes, I think the scene he ends up going, I don't know. I think it was his grandma. And then you just hear these sniggers and they're like, grandma. And he's like, oh, I'm so sorry. I went posh halfway through. And he just breaks into English halfway through. And it was interesting to see when they were yelling cut, the camera kept rolling. And he's like, I'm so sorry. I don't know why I went into British there. That's so annoying. But he doesn't keep in his accent.
Far out.
So Tom Holland is like, his accent is brilliant. He doesn't feel the need to stay in the accent. I would probably find myself in that equilibrium. I don't mind staying in the accent because it helps to keep, you know, if it's an important scene, like dramatic, you don't want to be screwing around on the side and, you know, kind of like, g'day, how you going? And then you've got to be in this scene and you're like, especially in the show that I'm doing, The Chosen, to have to go into like that biblical Judean kind of accent. I would probably ask the director for things like this.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you. And then when they all cut, I'm like, okay, how was that?
Yeah.
That's how I probably tend to do it.
Wow, that is brilliant. What a talent to have, eh?
Absolutely.
Far out.
I always find that fascinating as well. Watching like the making of like the Batman trilogy, the Nolan one, Christian Bale, Gary Oldman.
Do they show them backstage?
There's been a few, but they stay in character on. You know, they stayed in character all the way through. But then when they do the interviews after the fact, you know, you're so used to hearing that American accent come out of Christian Bale and Gary Oldman. And then
how are they? Can I ask you? So do they interview all three of those leads? Do they interview Christian Bale, Gary Oldman, and Heath Ledger?
I've never seen one with Ledger.
I would assume he could just he was just so in character that maybe they didn't. But
well, that's the word, that he was just completely cut off and he was completely in that, they just in let that him role. Do
yeah,
but yeah, just
wow. Yeah, what annoyed me the most, bloody Alexander with Colin Farrell, with his accent.
What did they do
what
for
the
him?
What the fuck happened there? He had his Irish, thick Irish accent.
Oh, he was doing
it
that.
It just didn't go. It didn't seem right.
We will march across Greece. No.
Yeah. Did you find that at all? I just found it just didn't add up. That's why I asked you, do they actually ask you to have an accent? With him, they didn't. He just said, use your Irish accent.
Well, that's what
just
I would ask. I'll ask you guys, what would you want to see if there was another Alexander? I'm now making notes here. Maybe I'll pitch an idea.
Yeah, definitely.
If they were to do another Alexander, and if they want to cast me as a Greek, then feel free. But anyway, what would you want to see in terms of, would you want to see British, like neutral?
You'd have
Greek,
to think,
speak ancient Greek or no? It wouldn't have to speak the ancient Greek.
Look, you'd have to have a I don't know, you made a good point, like a Greek American or a Greek Australian. Yeah. I don't know. You'd have to sound European-ish.
Southern European. You reckon? Because that's what we do with our show. With The Chosen, we've chosen to have... we've chosen to have like the Romans own everything. So if we were to be in that era, you have to speak Latin.
Mm.
And so they're speaking Latin. So that's what we're speaking. Australian, theirs is Latin. And if someone comes from another country to Australia, we're like, oh, that's an accent.
Mm.
They're not normal to us.
Yeah.
So in the show, we have them as basically Western.
Yeah.
You know, Quintus will sound like this, and sometimes there'll be
there's
a
an
British,
American. So the, like, the hegemon of the time is
that's what it is.
Much yes, the American, if I'm not mistaken. So Quintus and Gaius, I think, have the
American accents. And there are some British. Yeah. They call it transatlantic, which kind of means across the Atlantic, somewhere between Britain and the United States. But then when you've got the Judeans, they're kind of seen as sub. And they don't speak Latin that well, and they're speaking Hebrew. And so that's why we have the accents.
It's an interesting question you asked, though, because historically in film, you'd go back to Cecil B. DeMille productions, you know, like, you know, things like Ben-Hur.
Yes.
You know, Ten Commandments and all that sort of stuff. Usually what happens in all of those films is they go with the over-the-top British type thing, you know, Frank Thring as well.
Correct,
You know, doing your Pontius Pilates and all that sort of thing. I think we're conditioned to think, especially for scripts like that, that it's probably better to use like that sort of thespian type approach to it.
Yeah.
I'm not a fan of it. I actually think you guys have got it right in the sense that Judean type of, you know, that sort of accent or going down that almost, I mean, is European the right way? Just having some kind of accent that is similar to that is probably more appropriate than going.
Sounds similar to that region.
Mm.
That's right.
Because I've always thought about that, if there was to be an ancient Greek series we're doing ancient Judean, which is biblical era.
Okay, well, here's a good example. Sorry to cut you off.
Yeah,
so, two examples. Russell Crowe, right?
Yes.
In Man of Steel, we had a Jor-El that was Australian, effectively, right? Which, as much as I know Russell, it was not right.
Yeah,
you're right.
I didn't think it was right. Especially after seeing Marlon Brando in that role, you know, in 78. But then you go to the latest, which one was it? The Thor movie?
Mm-hmm.
Where he played Zeus.
Yeah.
And he's doing this really fucking weird Greek accent.
Was he?
Have you seen
it? I haven't seen it.
It's amazing.
Oh, wow.
I mean, it was over the top, but...
So he's doing like Greek accent like this? Or
basically,
not,
but basically the types of Greeks that he grew up with.
No way.
Here in Sydney.
He did on that. Acropolis now.
That kind of thing. He's doing this really weird Greek accent.
Oh, wow.
But it was comedic. You know what I mean? So he got away with it. The Man of Steel analogy, I don't think that was the right choice to go with an Australian type accent.
Yeah, right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I don't know the right... I would personally go with the accents if that's what you're...
Yeah,
definitely would ask the question.
Well, I tell you what, a really good example, again, going back to the video game, Assassin's Creed Odyssey... They actually cast Greek actors to do the... If they're not Greek, they're at least Greek-American or Greek-English. And, you know, he would be... I think the main character was talking like this.
Mm.
But then when he was the Mystios, when he said Mystios, and when he said Greek words, they would be in proper, even though they were ancient Greek. But that's kind of the voice they chose. I wonder if they did an ancient Greek series or film now, whether that would be jarring because... You know, again, if we're using the example of like The Chosen, if it's like, oh, well, if the Greeks are your base society, that we're focusing on? Do they just have a generic, you know, broad English or American or whatever accent that they have? It's a fascinating question.
I don't think there's one answer to this, because you look at, okay, we've had a couple of examples now, two more examples, and both Mel Gibson films, Apocalypto, Passion of the Christ. To me, as much as that was good, from an audience perspective, it's a little bit disengaging to have to read the subtitles, and it's a little bit jarring, as much as I love both those films.
See, I love, that's one of my favourite films, Apocalypto. I like the fact it was their native tongue, and you hear the voices, the sounds, and there wasn't much reading.
But all I'm thinking when listening to that is, how close have they gotten this? Yeah. How right is it?
Well, it sounded, well, if you read up on it, it sounded like you got it pretty close.
Well, that's the thing with Passion, is that I wonder if people who can speak Hebrew are like, oh, you know, the main actor is like, he's a white American. Yeah. I don't think he's Hebrew or Jewish at all.
Yeah.
Jim Caviezel, whatever his name is, Caviezel.
Caviezel. Yeah, yeah.
So I just wonder, I'm sure he did it. It's an incredible feat to be able to do that. I wonder Aramaic. If people heard that and went, oh, that doesn't sound... Or maybe it did sound good. I don't know. We would be able to tell Greeks, like, it's hard.
That's it. Because if we see someone who is not Greek speaking Greek, you're instantly like, yeah, that's shit. But that doesn't sound right.
I reckon there's probably one on the tip of my tongue somewhere where... Oh, you know what's a really good example is The Wire. You ever watch The Wire?
Yes.
They have the whole Greek storyline, and the guy's just like, he's like... You know, Tikanis, and it's there's a soft K.
That's why
you need to harden your K. Tikanis, you have to have the Greek. You have to have the Greek from here.
Yeah,
start sounding like Mimo from Acropolis.
Yeah, yeah. Well, who was here?
Really,
we had him
sat in your chair, mate.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah. Russell Crowe in Gladiator. So that was a great accent. The way he
Maximus
did that,
Decimus Meridius.
Yeah, that was
husband
good.
To a murdered wife. So that was more of the British approach.
Yeah.
But that sort of fitted that role, that character.
But see, that's what I'm saying. You know, that's what we're conditioned to think because of all these other... That's my argument.
Okay, yeah,
Going back to like your Ben-Hurs and all that sort of stuff. Why does everyone have to be British is the question.
It's probably... I reckon you hit the nail on the head. Yeah, it's the definitely. Thespian. It's a play. It's a theatre production.
It gives it gravitas, as they say.
Well, watch that space. It'd be intriguing to see what developments are made. And
we can't wait to see what you do with it.
Thank you. I'm writing it as we speak.
Are you saying something from experience? Like, you know, there's something happening behind the scenes with Alexander?
No, I don't know of anything happening. I do know that there is actually there's a book that I read called Circe, or we would pronounce it Kirki, which is based off the nymph, the nymph goddess child of Ilios, and basically the writer, I think her name's Madeline Miller, I think is her name, but she's written these two based off Greek mythology but like fictional books, but she's taken I think especially with Circe, I think she realized she's a massive fan of Greek mythology, and she's like an historian and possibly an archaeologist of some sort, loves going to Greece, British writer. And I think she just noticed that Circe is in a lot of stories. And she's like, well, it's kind of the, if you guys have heard of Rosencrantz and Guildenstern, the Shakespeare characters, there are these two characters that show up in a Shakespearean play. I can't remember if it was like Henry IV or I've got it wrong. But basically, someone made them the stars because there are these two, these like Abbott and Costello in the back. They're like comic relief. They're like, what are you doing? Hey, shut up, stupid. And then someone brought them up as the main characters. And so she kind of did the same thing. This character of Circe is kind of in every story. And so she's like, no, she's the star of this story. And when you read the book, it's a fantastic book. And, you know, inevitably HBO got onto it and said, we want to make a series about this. So that could be an example of what would, if that ever gets made. I know they're on the verge of making it and COVID hit. So it may just be permanently on the back burner. Yeah. I don't know. But, for example, in that, they might have to think about those things, but it's a great book. I highly recommend it.
They're making the Odyssey now, I think. Somewhere.
Is that what it is?
Well, she also wrote a book about the Odyssey as well.
Yeah.
That was her first one, I think.
I read somewhere that they're actually making either a film or a TV series about the Odyssey. I can't remember. Don't quote me on that.
Well, I've got to audition for this thing.
Well, we've gone deep and we haven't even spoken about The Chosen yet.
Exactly. We're way overdue.
How did that all come about, and what an amazing role to get?
It came about like any other audition. You know, it's... It actually started, the show started as almost like a web series. So it's kind of, not sure what it was, but I remember reading the script and thinking it's the same. It's actually the exact same phenomenon I just told you about with Rosencrantz and Guildenstern and Circe. Mm-hmm. It's what have you ever seen about Jesus and biblical era? You've seen the crucifixion.
Yeah.
Okay. Turn the camera off the cross and go down to who's watching the cross. Mm. We want to know their story. Yeah. That's basically how the show works. It's the tagline for the first season was the perspective of the story of Jesus Christ from those who knew him best, which is the disciples, not only the disciples, but, you know, I think that the bleeding woman, for example, who becomes Saint Veronica, I think is her name, or if it's, you know, to an extent, Good Samaritan, or who was involved in that instance, like what did those characters, what were they doing at the time? And so when I read the script, I know that the first episode, spoiler alert, although it is on Netflix, so... If you haven't watched it, this is not giving too much away, but the first episode is there is a fisherman named Simon who is down on his luck and can't pay his taxes. He's getting audited by a fellow Jew named Matthew, and he's working for the Roman government, and the only way he can pay back his taxes is if he sells out a bunch of his Jewish colleagues and says they're also not paying their taxes, so he becomes an informant. And if he agrees to sell out his own kind, his tax debt will be forgiven.
Yeah.
That doesn't really sound like a biblical series to me. You know, it's like, that's television, you know? Mm. And it's a completely different approach to this era, to this period. And so I read that first episode, and it's funny because I'll put a pin in that moment, me reading the first episode. Mm-hmm. But I get an audition for Simon, and, you know, it was a 9-page scene. Can you come in 48 hours? Standard. But I went into the room.
This is in the US now?
In the United States. I was living in Culver City, which is like 40 minutes away from West Hollywood.
Right.
In the best of times. In traffic, hour and 40 minutes. Sure. It's impossible. So the audition was in Culver City. So I walked to the audition. Already we're talking, this has been written in the stars. I put my backpack on with my water bottle and stuff. And I just, there's butterflies, beautiful weather. I was like, oh, it was a lovely day. Anyway, auditioned for Simon. I met, I'm pretty sure Dallas was there. Dallas was there in the room, I'm pretty... Or maybe he was on video. He may have been on video. I'm a
So Dallas is the creator for those. The
creator of the show. Yep. Anyway, so I did that. And they said, great work. I walked back. And on my walk back, in that 10-minute walk back... by the way, there was a Westfield right next to me, which made me feel like I was in Australia. Yeah. An OG Westfield in Culver City, where I lived near at the time. I get a call and they said, they loved you. But they want you to read for Quintus, the Roman praetor. And I thought to myself, like,
it's a bit of a change.
Look, if this is the show about like biblical times, I like the idea of playing a Roman because I'm an ancient historian myself. I studied ancient history.
Yep.
And so my favorite era is the Julio-Claudians, which is where this is, you know, Tiberius and all that.
Yep.
So I'm like, I'd prefer to be the Roman guy than the, you know, the disciple. And I didn't even really know if it was disciple. I'm like, I kind of forgotten about it. So I go, beautiful. When do I have to come back in? They're like, it'll be tomorrow. And this was like 4 p.m. And then they sent me 9 pages for Quintus. So I was like, okay. So in Australia, you have to be off book. And that's what I was thinking in my mind. I came back in and I put the sides down and the casting director is like, oh, you can keep your sides with you and you can read off it. We only gave you this yesterday. I go, oh no, I learned it. Weren't you supposed to learn the whole thing?
Yeah.
And they're like, no, where did you hear that? I'm like, oh, in Australia, you've got to learn everything off book. And they go, no, America, you get things so quick. They let you read off the script. Oh, I was like, oh, that's easier. Yeah. Just read it off the script. But I didn't need it. I ended up doing Quintus, completely different character.
Yep.
You know, my Simon was a bit like this and...
Yep.
What is going to happen with my brother? And then when I was Quintus, it was a little bit more, you know, refined, maybe transatlantic. Oh, look, a Jew. Oh, how nice of you. Come on in, you know, like very playful. And then like a couple of days later, they said, you've landed the role of John. I was just like, what? I thought, and part of me was like, I saw Quintus had all these lines and I'm like, I go through the first episode. I was like, oh, cool. It's about Simon and then there's Matthew and oh, Matthew must be the disciple. Matthew, Simon, who's Simon? Oh, Peter, Simon, Peter. That's him.
Yeah, right.
Cool. Who's Lilith? Oh, Lilith is another character. I wonder if that's anything to do with Mary Magdalene. Maybe, I don't know. And I'm like, where's John? Not in it. And so I'm like, well, does John do anything? And Dallas called me and said, look, I know this is a stretch, But this character gets big later.
Yeah.
But we want to kind of lock you in now because we loved what you brought to those characters. And in my mind, I always think I must be somewhere in between. John must be somewhere in between an out of luck fisherman and some smart ass Roman senator, you know? And so, yeah, in the second episode, I think maybe in the first episode, we get introduced to Simon. And he's like, you know, it's almost like the cantina scene in Star Wars.
Yeah.
And you know how you see Han Solo is just like in the background kind of thing in that scene? Yeah. You get introduced to him. Or is it Chewie? You see Chewie like, and then you never see him again for a little bit in the film. That's John, because Simon comes twice. He's like, James, John, how's it going? And I'm an extra. I'm just like, and I walk off.
It is the cantina scene, really.
It is the cantina scene. And so, like, John...
Who shot first?
And so when the series starts, not only is it this incredible, something that I think is going to be massive, a character that I know is going to be massive, because John...
I was going to say...
Spoiler alert.
Massive play. If you read the Bible and Disciples, John's his right-hand man. Jesus' right-hand man, eventually.
Yeah, he's the last guy at the cross. He's the only disciple who has the guts to go to the cross and be there for Jesus at the end. The only one. He's the first one to the tomb, as he writes so himself. The disciple that Jesus loved was there first. So he's a little bit... He might be a little bit full of himself, maybe, John. But he takes care of Mary, mother, as well. So, yeah, very important. So there's a lot of things here for this show that are... It does take a bit of, you know, to quote a lot of what Jesus does, especially in our series, and I'm sure they've taken it from, from Scripture. There's a lot of surrender going on. And so to me, I'm kind of like, I've got to back this. I've got to back this idea because at the time, it was a web series that wasn't paying a lot. And fast forward 3 years... we got through a pandemic and now we're on Netflix.
Yep.
We make $17 million at the box office by releasing episodes in the cinema. By the way, I don't know who else has ever done that, but The Last of Us recently did it. And they said, oh, isn't this a revolutionary new idea by HBO?
Yep.
Yeah. Chosen did it first. Yeah. And we made lots of money at the box office doing it.
And they've got the app as well, which is killing it.
I mean, I try as quickly as possible to kind of top and tail for the story about that. The app used to be something called Pay It Forward. So the idea was it always felt, Dallas was always saying this, it felt weird. It's like the only way to get a TV show is to pay for it. Like he goes, we spend a lot of money on the show and you've got to make money to make the next one. It was crowdfunded, but they're like, how do we cover costs? And so he goes, look, okay, we're going to try and think of a middle ground. If you want to watch the series, you can watch it for free. However, if you buy the series, you are letting other people watch it for free. So at the start, it's hard to watch. You have to watch it at specific times. So you will have to pay for it. But just know, if you're the first one that pays for it, five people will get to watch it for free. And so you can kind of feel good about yourself. Like, not only am I buying it for myself, I'm buying it for five other people. And so people would buy it and then... like, for example, they didn't give me a login for the app. So I was like a fan trying to watch the show. Yeah. I'm like, how do I watch it? And I was like on my phone, like, oh, it's not working. But like, you know, like on the app, it would say your stream is proudly brought to you by, you know, Jenny from Wisconsin or something. Yeah. It didn't say their name or anything, but I could watch the show. And they're like, if you want to watch another episode, you can watch, at 6 p.m. or something like that when more things are paid forward. Well. So that's how it kind of worked. It was a bit restricted. And so there was a part of me that, you know, I just got a login from the show because I work on it. But if you were a fan, you would probably go, I'll pay for it or whatever, but I don't have to. Then COVID hits and the entire world kind of goes into this, you know, pseudo recession, although it is now. But at the time, there was a massive slowdown. And so the show's actually sitting there going... this is going to be difficult to pitch this. And we want this show to be something that, and this is what Dallas was saying. He kind of did this very heartfelt stream and he goes, this could be the last stream. Because I tell you what I'm doing right now. I'm making the show free. He goes, this show you will never have to pay for it. And I'm pretty sure they're keeping it that way. I could be mistaken. I'm almost certain that that's how they're going moving forward. But they said, we're going to make this app free, especially during COVID. If we never make another dime off of it, then That's it. Yeah. So we'll see what happens. Anyway, enjoy the show. Then you're like, click, you know, like a cable guy. Click. Yeah. So anyway, it was kind of like that, which has happened so many times on the show. It was like the thing that happened next was miraculous.
Mm.
The show got all this money.
Yeah.
Why? Because so many people around the world watched it for free.
Mm.
People who were like, I've watched your show for free and I know you didn't ask me for any money, but I want to give.
Mm.
So from that moment, he's like, it kind of worked. Making the show free just made it happen.
Yeah.
And so from that moment onward, when you said like the app is free, I thought I'd just give a little bit of a background to it. Mm. It is legitimately free. There is, you know, you can probably, there might be some content on there that you can, that exclusive people, like if you want an exclusive, if you want to watch the episode before anybody, I think you can get like a membership or something like that.
Yeah, right.
But episode comes out the same for everybody, you know, at a certain time, and it's free, and it's groundbreaking. Right. And I heard someone, Nate Bargatze, have I said his name right? He was on Joe Rogan Experience. Mm. And he was like, there's this app, there's this show called The Chosen. And Joe Rogan's like, I've never heard of this. And I'm trying to do his voice. I can't do his voice. Doing his thing that we're talking about, moving his mic. But yeah, it is legitimately groundbreaking to have an entire television series in an app. Mm. Everything. We've got bloopers. Yeah. We've got like director interviews with me even. So yeah, it's great.
Fantastic. And it looks like such a great show to work on as well. It looks like it's fun.
You hear it all the time, and sometimes you could be talking broken biscuits and just kind of being like, oh yeah, everyone's like a family. It legitimately is.
Yeah.
It's everyone loves each other. It's the whole cast. I just talked to you then about so many, you know, the guy who plays my brother, we play Nintendo in our dressing rooms. And, you know, when the show was in its infancy, we used to have to share like a dressing room with a shared wall.
Yeah.
We tore the wall down so we could see each other and run lines with each other.
Noah James, is it?
Oh no, that's Noah James plays Andrew. We're also very close. Right, we play board games together.
Right.
But it's Abe Martel who plays my Bueno Jalad, I should say. He plays my older brother, Big James.
Okay.
So I talked about Liz, Mary Magdalene, and Paris plays Matthew.
Yep.
They will love Uzo talk.
Those two in particular are unbelievable.
Aren't they?
They are such good actors and play the role so well.
They have probably a little bit more on their shoulders than most of the cast, and especially at this early stage of the show. So yeah, they've done an incredible job. Just hitting it out of the park every single week. And we all love each other. Like I can tell you a story about every single crew member, cast member, you know, me and Jonathan, we lived very close to each other, who plays Jesus. Yep. And, you know, we used to do karaoke together. We had an AMC theater movie membership together. We'd go watch our weekly movies. Everyone's so close. It's brilliant.
Yeah.
So how close is it to the Bible, the series? Is it quite accurate?
It's it is.
Where does David get his material? Does he make it up as he goes along, or he's definitely using a Bible? Or
like the writers, you mean?
Or both?
So there are three writers, and I think they each bring their different like expertise, and those three probably take the lead on different episodes.
Okay.
I'd say Dallas is the most versed when it comes to the Bible. Dallas is the creator, Dallas Jenkins, there are large. He wants to make his idol is Vince Gilligan, for example. And so when you see our show, you'll see there are a lot of teasers. Yep. So it'll be like something happening and then something possibly catastrophic or brilliant happens and there's a cut to black and then we've got opening credits and then the episode's going to explain what's happening there.
Oh.
Useless trivia. Vince Gilligan did that on Breaking Bad. He was a staff writer on a show called The X-Files under Chris Carter.
Okay.
Chris Carter used to do those intros on The X-Files. You used to get an intro. You ever watched The X-Files?
I don't know if you ever did.
There used to be an intro and it'd be like a guy is like, oh, I'm feeling sick. And he'd like spew out an alien. And they're like, oh my God. And then The X-Files cut to black. So Vince Gilligan got it from Chris Carter and Dallas has got it from Vince Gilligan. And so when I say that, he's a television director. Mm. He's a television writer and director. So he wants to make good television. Yeah. So he can't just make it entirely the Bible and we're just reading scripture.
Yeah.
But he's a passionate Christian. So he does want there to be chunks where if Jesus is speaking parables, it's verbatim from the Bible.
Okay. So Christians are on board with this.
100%. 100% okay. They are.
The really interesting thing about it, though, you know, having read the Bible and, you know, let's full disclosure, we're not, we're probably the most, not the most devout Christians, but grew up in it and, you know.
I think it's very similar. I think, you know, yeah, it's, we're probably similar in that regard.
We try. But anyway, so.
You go to Greek Easter.
Exactly.
We do our best.
Exactly. You baptize the kids, you do all, anyway. Yeah. But the really interesting thing is, let's take a scene like the one between Jesus and Nicodemus, the where they meet.
Mm-hmm.
The majority of what is being said there is actually verbatim from the Bible.
Correct.
You know, it's one thing to read it. It's another thing to see two actors portray it and put it in a context that makes it look like a normal conversation.
Mm-hmm.
I just found it fascinating to see how that conversation may have actually gone down. It seemed really natural, whereas it seems really wooden being read from the Bible.
I'll give you, not to flog my own character, I'll give you another good example of that exact thing that you're talking about, because that's basically another scene with my character. Yeah. That's John 3:16.
Yeah, right.
So that's, and it's funny, whenever I hear John 3:16, I'm like, I'm the opposite of John 3:16, where I'm like, well, that's Austin 3:16. That's how I know 3:16. I feel so bad, because people are like, John 3:16, right? And I'm just like, yeah, it's no. Austin just whooped your ass.
Yeah.
You know, like, no, it's actually what was written in the Bible first. Fascinating story behind that, by the way, for another day, wrestling fans.
Yes.
My Uncle John, by the way, name drop to my Uncle John, John Xenos, who introduced me to the podcast and set this whole thing up.
Thanks, Uncle John.
Thank you, Uncle John.
Hey, Johnny boy.
He got me into wrestling as a kid as well. Yeah. So that's the only reason I know Austin 3:16 is because of him. But shameless plug, a similar thing happens with John, season 2, episode 1. The episode's called Thunder. And we see, I don't want to do any kind of reveals or anything, but it's been on TV so long and there's so many pictures of it.
Spoiler alert.
Bit of a spoiler alert. Seen it. Yeah, press pause here if you don't want to get it. It's not that much of a spoiler, but basically we catch John in the future writing his book.
Yep.
You know, he's trying to think of the best way to write it.
Yep.
And he's with Mary Mother because the last thing he's been told is, take care of my mother. And he goes, I will do it. I'll do whatever you say. And so he's sitting with Mary Mother and she's like, what are you doing? And my brother's just died.
Mm.
And I'm sitting there writing and I'm almost using the writing as a way to get over Jesus's death and also my brother's death.
Yep.
My brother's just... Big James, or James the Greater, was the first to be martyred.
Yep.
He went to Spain. That's the Santiago... de Compostela, I think it's called, the Way of St. James. So James traveled to Spain, and so Spain loves James. That's why they called it Santiago. That's where Tiago comes from.
Oh, right.
Because Tiago is based off Iago, which is based off Jacob. So he's actually named Jacob. I don't know where James came from.
Mm.
But anyway, I'm mourning my brother. I'm just writing. And she's like, why are you doing this? And in my head, I'm like, I don't want to talk about James.
Mm.
I don't want to talk about it. I just want to get this stuff down.
Yeah.
And I'm like, if I don't put it down, everyone's going to forget about Jesus and no one's going to remember. And she's like, you do know that of all the words in the world, like you couldn't put all of it down to explain him.
Yeah.
And then my character goes, huh, a disclaimer. I'll use that. And in the book, you can see John writes, in all the words, you could not describe what the, you know, it's. Yeah. And so it's that same thing.
Yeah.
It's verbatim what John was writing in his, it's his famous opening. Yeah. In the beginning was Word and the Word was God and the Word was with God. I have to remember it because I'm the character. But it's kind of getting an idea. How did he think of that stuff? And they're like, oh, creative license. You know, that's not exactly what happened.
Yeah.
Mary Mother was not the inspiration for part of what John said, but
it gives some context that otherwise you don't have.
The best way to describe the show is it's based a lot on the history and also on gospel and scripture, and there's a lot of creative license in the middle of that. You know, Matthew is on the spectrum because he's a tax collector and his book is meticulous, really like meticulous. And there's a little scene, a little Easter egg when Matthew's like, did you write down to John? Like, did you write down what he said? And I'm like, I told you, I'll write it down later. And he's like, you must be. And so Matthew's like, make sure you get it. Whereas John's book, actually, bring it back to Greeks, by the way, apparently written in a very Hellenic style because he writes it very artistically and there's a lot of motif and finding meaning and it's quite poetic.
Yeah.
Whereas Matthew's is very Judean. It's like, this happened and there could have been a bad thing, and then the world, but maybe there wasn't a bad thing. Whereas John's is like, hey, this is the world, this is the word, and this is,
it's a narrative.
There's a lot of, and we know John retires to Patmos in Greece, so there's a lot of Greek Hellenic.
I've actually been there.
Yeah,
yeah.
You've been to the cave, have you?
Yeah, I have been to the cave.
What was that like?
It was just a simple cave. It had icons everywhere, but they built a massive church above it as well.
Yeah. I've seen pictures. It must be amazing to be in there.
It is. Yeah, look, I've been to Jerusalem as well, you know, the old Sepulchre Church. That was mind-blowing, actually. Mm. Well, actually, I went there twice.
They're trying to take us as a cast, so that might be interesting. Wow. That might be a bit of a spoiler alert here.
Documentary.
But, yeah, I think they're just going to take a camera crew and we might all go to Jerusalem. Fantastic. And just go. But they could do a similar thing with me in Greece, especially being Greek, to go to Patmos. I've got the passport. It might be easier. But, you know, that'd be fascinating to kind of wear in the show and then to also walk the same steps, perhaps.
Make it happen, mate. That'd be fantastic.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I got a mate in Patmos, Andrew.
Oh, cool.
He was a submariner here in the Australian Navy.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I think he's got the only Harley in Patmos. Or this is 20 years ago.
Now. I'm visiting this person.
Yeah. If he's still there. Andrew Pappas, if you're still there, mate, reach out to me.
So what did... I read somewhere else that being part of this series actually helped to either rekindle or reignite your faith. What's it actually done for you?
I think the main thing for me is that it's just something I didn't understand as much, and there's something that we I think we're comfortable saying in the cast. There's people from all different faiths and backgrounds, you know. I think we're all very comfortable saying, and sometimes I feel possibly I could be disrespectful by saying this, but growing up, you know, Greek Orthodox, listening to, sometimes being in a really kind of an older church, and we always use this phrase of the stained glass windows, although we've got the iconography, you kind of you get a bit, you can be disassociated from it, and I know about all the stories, and I think Saint Spyridon, for example, was great at that. Father Stephen used to show us videos and was very fun, spoke to us obviously in English, and that was a great way to learn. And actually we learned from cartoons. I remember the Palm Sunday cartoon where Jesus comes in on the donkey with the palms on the floor. I understood that, and that was the best way to kind of understand it, but again, I can't always watch the cartoons when I'm in church. And so in church, sometimes there can be that disconnect.
It is really hard, isn't it, with our faith? Because you really don't, unless you actually study it, it's really hard to understand what's going on.
Well, because it's in ancient Greek. Yeah. It's not even written
as well. I know. They may have fixed that up a bit by making it not only in just all normal Greek, but also in English. Yeah. But, you know, with the show, I think it's just allowed me to, at the very base of it, just understand what a lot of what was being said, you know, like it's not just we're picking a reading today.
Yeah.
It's, there is a lot. And for me, I'm probably a little bit, too well-read, probably more well-read than other people would want me to be. In that sense, I find gems of knowledge everywhere, let's just say. If you're a well-read, versed, worldly traveler, and when I watch the show and I hear Jesus speaking, and they are, like we said, verbatim scripture words, it's like, oh, that could mean this thing, and that could mean that, and I wonder if Jesus is talking about this idea. And you don't really think that when you're in church. You're probably just listening to the words, and nothing against church or anything like that. But, you know, if you ask me, what has the show done to, you know, how has it assisted in my knowledge of this era, of biblical era and whatnot? Definitely, it's just made things more relatable, I would say. For example, there's like a parable that Jesus, it's from the show. It's an episode. I always talk about this one. Episode 7, I think it's called Indescribable Compassion. It's on Netflix.
What series is it? Huh? The second or third series?
First season.
Oh, season.
First season, which is on Netflix. Yep. And
episode 7, first season, yeah.
It could be episode, yeah, I think it is. Indescribable Compassion, it's called. Jesus heals a paralytic who comes through the ceiling of a house. Mm-hmm. And he's talking about a parable about, like, someone asks, when is the kingdom of heaven arriving? And then he doesn't say Wednesday, and he doesn't say tomorrow or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
He tells this parable, and he's like, well, let me ask you, you know, if your master was away and you need to open the gate for him, would you go to sleep? And they're like, well, no. And he goes, why wouldn't you go to sleep? It's like, well, then if you went to sleep and he knocked on the door, well, then you wouldn't be allowed to come in. It's like, okay, well, what if you left the gate open? Because you want things to be easier. Going to sleep is easier, but also, why don't you just leave the gate open?
Mm.
Like, well, then anyone could just come in. Like, you could get, like, criminals and stuff.
Sure.
And he goes, so what are you supposed to do? They go, well, you're supposed to stay awake near the gate and wait for the knock. And so he goes, that's the kingdom of heaven. He's not going to... Jesus didn't want to tell this villager, whoever came in the door and asked this question. If I tell you when it's happening, you'll go to sleep or you'll open the gate. You need to be constantly there. And there's so many ways you can read into that. You can use that in your current day, you know, always be present. I mean, if you're an actor, if you're on set, always be present. You can not only use it spiritually, you can also use it. You can use it philosophically. There's so many ways that you can read it. And like I said, there's so many people of different faiths on our show, and they are all appreciating these words the exact same way that I am, despite the fact I've been, you know, raised Greek Orthodox. So that's what I mean when I, if you get my drift, when I'm saying worldly travelers, like,
yeah,
it's cool to hear these words and appreciate them in many different ways. I'd say that's the clearest, most longest answer I can give you.
No, that is that's a fantastic, brilliant way, because we all grew up in the Greek Orthodox faith, and as a kid, my memories was just sitting on the hard wooden pews, smelling the scent.
Smells great, by the way.
Yeah, it does. And hearing these beautiful, echoey sounds. I didn't know what the meaning was.
Correct.
And pouring wax on the person next to you.
Yeah. Oh, at Easter. Oh, don't get me started.
Greek Easter. Easter.
the women with the hairspray trying to light their hair. And, jeez. No, but that was our memory. We didn't know anything about Ridley. And what you just said, it just summed it up perfectly. So it makes really good sense. People who haven't really read the Bible or memorized it, watch the series.
Well, absolutely. And it's like I said, you don't have to be the most religious person, you know. Our set is not full. This is when you said, do Christians like the show? Absolutely, 99%. There is going to be the 1% who is just like, oh, the cast aren't like Christian, so that means the show is sacrilegious and whatever. And the first person to tell them, you know, I think you're mistaken, is Dallas, our creator, someone who is a devout Christian, very, very dedicated. So if you can get lessons from it, I think that's that the, at the end of it, that's probably the message, what Christians isn't it? They want people to feel more complete. And if you watch the show and you're not a Christian, but you know, you hear Jesus's parable about waiting at the gate and you go, oh, that might teach me to be more present in the present moment. You start appreciating your life in the current moment, and then all of a sudden everyone around you, it just becomes that much more important to you, and you're not worrying about the past or the future. Here you go. Like, that's a great life. That's not too bad.
Just brilliantly said, the way you just described it. You're right. And unfortunately, growing up, we never had that.
Yeah.
We never got to experience that, got to think that at a young age. But again, shows like this, and the priests have come a long way now. If you go to church, 100%. They actually explain it to you in a better way. Talking English now.
Well, like I said, Father Stephen was probably a trailblazer back in the, you know, groundbreaking back in the day, because he would show us the cartoons. Definitely. And he would use humor, which is what our show does a lot. I think two things that they say about this Jesus: Jonathan's portrayal is the best ever and will ever be, in my opinion. I don't think anyone's going to nail it more than Jonathan.
Hard to argue with.
Incredible. And the two things that he brings is humor and familiarity. There's a scene I always point to, which is in the Miracle of the Fish, episode 4. The first time we really get a good look at John.
Yeah.
We don't see John before that. He's just in the cantina bar.
Easy, Chewy.
You know?
Someone's got to cut that.
Yeah. That is brilliant.
Yeah, we've got to cut it with the music. That'd be great. And who shot first? Was it Simon or John? That's a stickling point with my Uncle John, by the way. Yeah. I'm pretty sure he does not like that they changed that Han was not the one who shot first, going into Star Wars lore.
That's a religion of sorts.
Yeah, forgot where I was going with the Miracle of the Fish thing. I'm sure there was something in there. But no, it's oh, that's right. With the Miracle of the Fish, when Jesus comes off and he says, put your line in for a catch. And by the way, you've got to watch that scene. That used to be my favorite. Yeah. The only reason why it's not my favorite now is because they gave me a whole episode to do in it in season 2. Like, of course, I'm going to like the episode with my character in it. But the fish was so much fun, hard to film, great CGI with the fish. But at the end, Simon is like shocked by the miracle because he didn't have faith, drops to his knees and looks up at Jesus. And that's how it's kind of written. I'm pretty sure it's always shown like that. And this sums up Jonathan's portrayal of Jesus is that, and Dallas, I remember on the day, because That day was a lot about us four as the disciples mm-hmm. with the miracle of the fish. But then obviously when that moment happens, I got to take a step back and watch as the actor because the camera's close in on Jesus and Simon. And yep. Dallas came to me and said, I'm worried about this scene. I said, why? He goes, watch what Jesus is going to do here. And as mm-hmm. we're watching the rehearsal, Jonathan and Jesus comes down to knee level. And mm-hmm. instead of looking down at Simon, he comes down to his level and says, follow me. And Dallas goes, this will be a good litmus test for like the fans of the show. He goes, either they're going to love it or they're going to hate it. Mm. I said, why? He goes, people want to see Jesus as God and mm. Simon is a peasant, mm. you know, or is a mere mortal. Mm. And we can't show them on the same level. You can't be the same as Jesus. But our show brings Jesus down to knee level. And has a chat to Simon. Yeah. And he goes, that's the Jesus I want to portray. And yeah. people loved it. And he's like, we did it. That's it. Yeah. That scene Brilliant. Sums it up. Mm. And that's the Jesus that the show is portraying. It's yeah. familiar. And then there's loads of humor. There's mm. the wedding at Cana. Mm. And he's like doing Zebekika.
Yeah.
yeah. Everyone's doing these dances. And yeah. You're kicking and stuff. And
great episode,
you know,
too.
We know, spoiler alert, that's where yeah. he turns water into wine. But it's a footnote.
Yeah.
Sometimes the miracle will be the main event. Other times it'll be a footnote in the water to wine. It's a big moment. He yeah. turns it, but he just, you know, goes into that room and, you know, has a moment with the barrels.
Yeah.
But the Plus main
Thomas
thing.
Thomas to beat it.
yeah. Get out of here. Yeah.
But how good is it you actors get a chance to talk about the scene and the play and you talk to Dave, give your advice?
Yeah.
So is that a normal thing? The actors get to give a bit of advice and recommendations and so forth?
Well, I'm getting almost deja vu. I feel like I may have had this conversation before, like, and it could have just been legitimate deja vu, but like sometimes I would say on others, like when I was on American Crime, I'll flat out say it, I had some conversation with the director, but no, you're going in, you're doing your scene and then you leave.
Yeah.
Whereas on The Chosen, I know Dallas chats to every single extra.
Yeah,
wow. It feels like that. And if Dallas is going to sit there and speak to every single extra, well, you better believe he's got more than enough time for all of us, which he does. And he sits down with all of us before every scene, has a chat. We can even chat to the executive producers. They come down.
Yeah.
And have a chat as well. Mm. The writers come down. Everyone's a big family and we get to chat about the scene.
Team culture, as you say.
Yeah, 100%. That's
Fantastic.
Great.
Fantastic.
That's why it's such a great series by the sounds of things.
It is phenomenal. I did not watch the show. I don't watch anything I do. I just really? take my show real and I didn't watch The Chosen either. It's not going to, no exception to the rule. A bit weird watching myself. I kind of just, I treat it as a mechanical process. Mm, yeah. Take my scenes. Where do I not look weird? And then put them in a show reel. But for this show, I just wanted to show my wife, girlfriend at the time, or fiance at the time. I just wanted to show her a scene because I'm like, oh, you'll be pretty surprised. I'm pretty sure they got the CGI pretty good in this scene.
Mm.
And I'd scrubbed on the app and I'd used the Chromecast, the TV. We're watching it on the TV now. It's like legit television now we're watching. And at the time, I was like, is this a web series? I don't even know what it is. So I'm watching it and I go, oh, I've scrubbed about 2 minutes before the scene, but my dad in the show, played by Nick Shakur, is also part Greek. Zebedee comes on and Christy, me and Nick had hung out together and Chris's like, oh, Nick. And I go, you've got to watch Nick's scene. He's hilarious. So we watched Nick's scene. Incredible with Zebedee. Zebedee's a fan favorite. Yeah. And so that happens. She's like, was I there that day? Because Christy was on set that day. I'm like, no, that was the day after. And you may have been on set this. And then we kept watching it. Then the scene with the leper came and the CGI was unbelievable. And then after that, we ended up in the house where we had the, and I was like, oh, what happens here? I think this is where they get low. I ended up watching, I'm like, you have to watch this part as well, but if we need to know that part, we just ended up watching the whole episode.
Yeah.
And I was like, that was bloody good.
Yeah.
I didn't want to watch it, but I was just like,
great episode.
I was like, that was just great television. So I went, I'm not in the first four episodes or hardly in it. So I go, I might go watch it. Yeah. I might go sit down. And I legit sat down with my parents actually and watched it. Got through it like that and had not only a great time watching all of my friends perform and stuff, but I was like, this is a genuinely good show. So I'm not lying when I say I genuinely do think it's a great television series.
The numbers don't lie, do they?
Yeah. Sorry?
The numbers don't lie. It's
yeah, we're trying to get to a billion loops on our app. Yeah. I think we're at 400 million or something. Yeah.
Can I just ask you, so how long does it take now to do one episode? And do you go over to the States to do one episode? Do you do a whole season? How does all that work?
So we'll do a whole season. Season three, for example, because of COVID, COVID made everything difficult. Mm. So it wasn't as usual. I think season four might be a more usual time frame.
Yep.
We shot last year. It was almost like we shot 3 months, then had a break, then shot 3 months, give or take.
Mm-hmm.
This season, for season four, it's a five-month shoot. It gives you an idea. 8 episodes, 5 months.
Okay.
I still have, when people ever ask me, actually like friends will ask me like, how long does it take to shoot a scene? I could legitimately go to Mike. This is again, great for radio, but I keep talking as I do it. So yeah. There's no dead spots, right? It's not my first
he's
rodeo.
He's done this before.
Multi-talented.
It's as if I've hosted a podcast before and I have. But get this, this is really funny. This is actually really funny. This is the first of September 2022. It's a Thursday. At these times would have to be in American. So I'm just going to give you the Australian times.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, Liverpool played Newcastle. But at the same time, John and Thomas heal the blind girl. So that gives you an idea of what's happening that day.
Yeah.
So John's... Oh, I hope Dallas doesn't.
Football
Dallas
calendar.
Dallas cannot hear that. Maybe he can. Doesn't matter. You can keep this in the show. And it's already done, and it was a great episode, and people thought it was great. So I can. But basically, it gives you an idea. That whole day was dedicated. It's two scenes we shot. That was about 3/4 of a day.
Right.
Wow.
So, and then they probably had. It's probably a scene per section of the day. So if we shoot maybe 8 a.m. till it's like 5 hours maybe, and that's one scene. 5 hours for a scene. Also. Yeah.
And how many scenes roughly in a show?
In a show, 50.
Wow!
Because that's
and
cool.
Then multiply it by the amount of takes you need to do as well.
So quick math: so 25 days.
Maybe 30. Let's call it 31 scenes an episode.
Okay.
So yeah,
spend half a day to do one scene.
Half a day for one scene.
15, 2.5 weeks.
Yeah.
To do a show.
Yeah, that's a good. You've done the math.
How many pages for an episode?
Pages are about 60 pages an episode. 60. A minute per page, is the rule of thumb.
That's how I remember it.
Yeah. And so for this day, there's three important events happening. So there's episode 402, which is if it says 402, it means episode 4 of season 3. So episode 4, scene 2.
Mm.
John and Thomas heal the blind girl. Then there's 409. So that's episode 4, scene 9. John and Thomas lead the family in the Lord's Prayer. And then the third most important event, Liverpool versus Newcastle United.
In no particular order.
In no particular order. So what happened that day is when they yell cut, unfortunately. I didn't have any lines that day, by the way. It was all a montage. So I thought to myself, I'll just take a peek at the game.
And so you're wearing your Apple Watch going, shit, what's the score?
Yeah. If I'm not mistaken, Fabio Cavallio scores a last minute winner that game. So I went mental that day. I was crazy.
Good
classic.
I also did episode 6, scene 18. Episode 6, scene 18A. That's where I went mental.
Wow.
Episode 6,
there
scene
you 18.
There you go.
So there's a scene where Jesus is talking in the round and I'm sleeping and I wake up and I tell Simon and James, quick, Jesus is chatting. Mm. Liverpool are playing at that moment. So if anyone wants to watch season 3, go to episode 6.
Yep.
It's actually not when I'm healing the blind girl. It's just before it. That's when Carvalho scores.
So we can see it in your posture.
Yeah.
Not in my pocket. Like the phone. Like the phone is off.
Yeah.
And
stuff. Jesus is talking, and George is never walking alone.
When I get excited, they've just got the Liverpool game as my eyeline. Like Jonathan's like, "Hey, you want me in the scene, bud?"
Yeah.
And I'm just like, "Jonathan, can you move? Because Liverpool are playing."
Yeah.
And
you get George excited. Replay the Man United Liverpool game.
Oh, yeah.
That's it.
Take too long. 7 goals, man. It's 19 minute highlights.
Yeah. Classic. Good as it. So now you're recording season 4 now. Or is that just...
We haven't started.
Oh, you haven't started.
We plan to start at the end of March. So I don't know. I'm not sure when this episode goes out. Mm-hmm. It could be starting filming when the episode goes out, I would assume.
Fantastic. So that'll be 5 month stint back in... Is it LA? What are you doing? You're filming?
So I live in Los Angeles, but I film in Texas and a little bit in Utah. Utah is incredible. I highly recommend anyone to visit Utah.
Mm.
Incredible state. Picturesque, beautiful. And then we film mostly in Texas. We've actually built... You guys ever watched... And we'll bring back full circle to our friend Robin Williams.
Yep.
He did a movie called Popeye. You ever seen Popeye?
I've heard of it. Never watched it, but yeah, it was... I know the movie. I've seen it.
Mauritius or something. They built a little town... Popeye's town, yeah. And they built it especially for the film. It was supposed to be this big blockbuster. The film bombed at the box office, but they kept the town, and people now go visit this town in like a little European city. That's what we've done with The Chosen. So in this little tiny town by a little river in Waxahachie in Midlothian in Texas, just south of Dallas, there is this miniature like biblical city that's been built. It's like on the water. It's got big Roman gates. That's our set. And so you can interchange things. Sometimes one day it'll be James and John's house, and then in the next day it's a synagogue.
It's going to become a place of pilgrimage in the future, like the Shire in New Zealand.
Exactly. I was going to use a much worse example with Popeye, but let's use the Shire. Yeah, people. It's almost like a little bit like a
Middle Earth.
Yeah, it's. I don't want to disparage the show and disparage its content by saying it's almost like a Disneyland, because it's nothing to compare what we're doing to Disney stuff. But at the end of the day, like Disneyland, people go there and they take photos and they're like, this is where this happens, or it will be a bit like a theme park. Like when we're not filming, they could definitely bring fans in and they could be like, that's where that scene was and that sort of thing.
Originally, all of these biblical films, like if you go to the 60s and 70s and whatnot, there was a site in Tunisia where all of these things were shot.
Yeah.
And Monty Python, after a legit film on Christ was filmed.
The Meaning of Life?
Monty Python went and did Life of Brian.
Life of Brian. Oh, right.
Straight after.
Right.
Just like, they still had the sets there, so we just...
Did they get the permission? Yeah. Probably not.
No, they did. It was all legit. It was all above board.
Wow.
There you go.
And George Harrison paid for it.
Really?
Really?
True story.
Oh, wow.
He bankrolled the film.
Beautiful.
Oh, right. There you go.
Good. Another bit of useless trivia for you.
I love useless trivia.
I love it too.
How good is that?
So season four, have they told you roughly how long this series is going to go for? Is it just up to the consumers?
I'm pretty sure that I'm not revealing too much here by saying, because Dallas does live streams, because our income stream is not like a traditional studio. We're not bankrolled. Again, the show is free. So when HBO put their series up on cable, people pay for a subscription, and that's how they get. And there's advertisements before and after. All that revenue stream doesn't apply to the show. So the show has been crowdfunded since day one. So when it's crowdfunded, your crowd are your stakeholders, going back to our economics knowledge and commerce knowledge. So your stakeholders need to know about the series, right? So Dallas keeps them well informed. And he has said many times, we're planning to do 7 seasons. That's definitely what we're doing. In season one, it was kind of like wishful thinking. Are we going to get to 7? And even now, I'll tell actor friends of mine, like, I remember in season one, my actor friends were a little bit looking down on the what are you doing? What is this thing? And it's like, trust me, this is a really good idea, and it's a good show. And now, 7 seasons is 100% going to happen. A little bit of a tangential thought. When you see the episode like The Wedding at Cana, and you see Jesus dancing, look, there's no spoilers here. We know what's happening at the end of this series. That's when a lot of us actually in the cast will be... We play games on set and stuff, and we'll be joking around, lots of waiting around, especially we're always in the background of each other's scenes. But we'll have a little think and we'll be like, how hard is that going to be? There's going to be a scene where Jesus is going to be nailed to the cross, and it's just like...
So even now, it's
counting down. We're like, oh no, what season are we in? When are they doing this? We don't know. We don't know when anything's happening. 7 seasons. We're like doing the math. Like, do they do it in season 7? Is it going to be the last scene? Is it going to be in season 5? Oh, he's got to resurrect. So when's he going to resurrect? We have no idea when it's going to happen.
Wow.
But that moments when you see Jesus's character laughing and having fun and stuff we don't see in Passion of the Christ.
Yeah.
We don't see, or even the cartoon I watched with Father Stephen, he's just on the donkey, like, one of you will betray me tonight and all that. It's like, well, no, we're watching him doing the Zabekika at a wedding.
Yeah.
We don't want, like, you never want, no one wants Jesus to be nailed to the cross, but that's, I think it's more to do with Jesus.
Yeah.
This is not only Jesus, it's a fully fleshed character with opinions and a personality and ways of dealing with problems. This is someone who is going to be put through something horrible, and it's like we're all going, how are we going to deal with that? And none more so than me. I'm going to have to be there that day. The others are going to be in their civilian clothes, maybe watching or maybe not. John is going to have to be there. I know Mary Magdalene might be there. I think Mary Mother is there.
Yeah.
Especially for those three, it's going to be torture. I can't even imagine. Wow. I think about it as Jonathan as well. It's like crazy. As an actor, is it my friend? Is that Jesus? Jesus is John's friend as well, but he's like my mentor, but he's God, but it's that's going to be crazy. Be
a really moving episode.
Whenever you think about Seven Seasons, that's what you think of.
There's going to be real emotion there. Whatever we see when that moment comes, that's going to be real.
100%. And a lot of the scenes between myself and Jonathan have been like that. We've joked before the scene, and so if there's anything... And it's like that with all the actors, I think. The emotions are there because now it's a little bit easier now to do these scenes because you can just revert into an emotional state that's just in the moment, bringing it back to our present moment, you know, analogy what Jesus was talking about in that parable. But, you know, when you're an actor and you're doing all your homework, you're like, what am I going to use? Am I going to use a substitution? Am I going to use Stanislavski? Am I going to use Meisner? What technique am I using? These are all acting techniques, you know. Well, when you're on a show for 3 years, I am John, and we're the same person, and George might think of something and John will react, or John might think of something and John will react. This camera doesn't know who's reacting. So if George finds something funny and I laugh, and then afterwards Dallas says, John laughing there was pretty funny, it's like, oh, that was George. So we're very lucky, and I think actors who work on shows for this long are luckier. And it just hopefully it's what these actors use. I'm thinking about people like Pedro Pascal, who's just one of the top of the game at the moment when he's doing Mandalorian and he's doing Last of Us. You probably just get really comfortable, I'd imagine. So I can't wait to get into more audition rooms to supplement, you know, this amazing work with other things.
I've got to say as well, just about the show, just an observation, and it says a lot about how audiences have become conditioned to watching television and films nowadays. I found myself watching, again, I think it was in season one where Jesus is teaching the children.
Yeah. Oh.
Fantastic episode and fantastic scenes, but it says a lot about the audience when I'm watching something like that. The episode starts with this child with a doll going into this, you know, into this forest, and immediately my immediate reaction was something bad's about to happen. And it's not that kind of show. You know what I mean? It's wholesome in a way that it's not Disney, it's, as you say, and it's not being overly religious in some weird way.
That's correct. But it isn't.
The only way that I can describe it is it's genuine. It's genuine and wholesome in a way that I don't think I've seen other TV shows be.
It exists in this perfect kind of middle ground where it probably, you know, something horrifying is not going to happen, like you said, but, you know, something groundbreaking would happen. It's crazy. It is honestly, it's going to do so well. Continue to do so well. It's just doing so well. Yeah. There's no way to describe it.
It's fantastic. And we're so proud about the fact that you're in it.
Oh, thank you.
100%. You know, and
so am I. I'm proud to be on it.
I'm sure your family is as well. You know, there are many religious people in your family as well.
For us, like, my parents are proud as punch. I think my dad, both my parents have been really, really supportive. Yeah. You know, my dad I don't mean to be exposing my poor father, but like, someone will mention The Chosen, and you know, he's like, oh, my son's in that show, and, you know, he'll be like, George, can you sign, like, he'll get like photographs, and I'll sign them, and he'll make sure that these people get them. So
fantastic.
It goes beyond support.
He should be. He should be proud.
Absolutely. No, absolutely. Fantastic. My family's stoked. It's like a really funny story, actually, about my brother and my yaya were at church in St. George, the St. George Church in Rose Bay. And the priest Father was talking about,
Father Yerasimo.
Yeah, I don't want to say. I wonder if it was Yerasimo. It could have been. And I don't want to.
We actually did a podcast from there. a live podcast.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. Bay. Well, yeah. He may have been him saying it, and there's nothing wrong with any of this, but sure. He was talking about the show. Yep. About, there's this television series called mm-hmm. The Chosen, and I don't know if any of you know, but there is an actor on there, you know, who was raised in the Greek Orthodox faith. And my brother and my yaya were kind of, you know... By the way, I know
they
I can
want to
say
jump
yaya.
Up.
I know I can say yaya on this show. Yeah, I'm always like, grandmother. Yeah. And I can be yaya. Yeah. I can just say it properly in Greek podcasts. Yeah. Beautiful. Yeah. But they're like, oh, this is... They're going to talk about George. And they're like, but as some of you will know, what, you know, one of the actors raised Greek Orthodox, Jonathan Rumi, and they're talking about Jesus because he was raised Greek Orthodox because his father's right. Egyptian and Egyptian Orthodox. It's like the closest denomination.
Yeah.
I found it funny that, like, you know, I'm definitely proud to be on the show and stuff, and I would love to fly the Greek flag for, you know, everything that we've grown up with. But I really thought that maybe John really goes under the radar to the extent that, like, they had a Greek Orthodox Australian right in front of them. Like, you didn't see it?
Who's probably been in this church many times.
Millions. My yaya is on like the board. They know there's that. Wow. So, but you know what? I take it as a compliment because it must have been that you can't. Like, the character is like, you don't realize or whatever. Like, it's... That's also a good thing as well. As an actor, you always want to... I like the fact if I don't get recognized for anything, and I don't, not to say I do get recognized, but if I ever did it didn't happen as often, it's probably because hopefully I'm transforming enough on screen that it doesn't... Yeah. It's not as obvious. but poor Jonathan doesn't have that issue. People definitely know because he has to keep the same beard and hair and everything.
He's fantastic.
He doesn't have. He's incredible. But I found that funny. I'm just like, hopefully next time they'll mention the Greek Australian, Greek Orthodox actor on the show.
That's it. We're going to shout it from the rooftops.
We will now. We'll tell everyone.
Thank you.
We'll send it to everyone. Look, just one last thing as well. So, what's your? If you had to pick a perfect role, what would you do? If moving forward,
good question.
Because I know this show's going to end. So, what's next for George? And what would be your ideal role?
You know what? I have a perfect role. I can't say too much about it. Okay. It's something I auditioned for. I'm going to put it out into the universe now. It's about a Greek American in the 80s. And it's actually something that I auditioned for. And look, it's someone who it goes through a tough period. I would say that. Since I was a kid and, like, you know, if you ask me, you know, stereotypically, ancient Greece, something to do with ancient Greece. I'd love to be a Greek portraying an ancient Greek. That would be fantastic. But I feel like that there's this role because there's a gap in film at the moment. You see with the, like, Oscar nominations this year, it's like, what's happening there? Television is king at the moment.
Yeah.
It's everything. So there's a gap in film, and so I think if any actor can do meaningful film work now, you have a chance of skipping the line a little bit. And not that there is a line, but if you do a good job in a film, it gives you the chance to be involved in something that maybe before it was too difficult because it was so saturated. There is no saturation in the film market at the moment.
Yep.
So there is a particular script. It's written by a Greek, a prominent Greek in the film and television industry. I'm not saying any names, and I don't think people even recognize the person because their name isn't Greek.
Yeah.
But I just, great script. It's a dream role of mine, but it's based in the 80s, and it's a Greek American from New York, and it's cool. I really want to do it. Okay. And if it happens, then you heard it here first. That's my dream role.
Have you auditioned?
We've put it out there.
Putting it out there.
It's out there in the universe now.
You will get the role. On this thing.
George, you're going to get the role.
You are.
Thank you. Thank
we believe God, in that do. Shit, man.
I hope we do. So. Yeah. Energy. You've got three energies now.
That's it. Yeah. We're putting it out there.
If not that, then some...
Odyssey.
Some Greek mythological, like hard-boiled... Yeah, weary traveler. Maybe a.
We need a really good blockbuster ancient Greek.
Yeah,
something like Gladiator. They'll
be
nailed
one.
It.
There'll be one. A good one.
We really do need to do because there's so much rich history in that. You know, with it's the first
comic book. Really,
exactly.
I mean, it's like 100% like Marvel. You know,
100%
powers and they fly. It's awesome.
Troy was kind of that. You know, with Achilles. But
they got 300. Yeah.
Actually, yeah, 300 was good, okay. As well.
Yeah, it was based on the comic, but I don't know. For me, Gladiator was the ultimate, yeah, kind of thing. But look, we're getting there, hopefully. Yeah.
Yeah. You got to do it, mate. You got to you got to start pushing.
I'll do one of those. That's another one of my dream ones. There's the two. There's one that's kind of like really low key, like dream roll. And then there's the Greek mythological thing, which is just like dream roll. Yeah,
fantastic. Hey, George Miller. George Miller, you're out there. Write a script, mate.
I would love to. Apparently, someone in my family is very close to someone in his family, and they've been trying to get me to meet him for a while.
We keep hearing this because we're trying to get him.
We're trying to get him as well.
Oh, really?
We know people that know him. I think related to him, but he's very hard. I think he's doing it.
He's not Catherian, is that right?
He's Catherian.
There we go. That's how we, because the Kaz and Catherians came at the same time, and they know each other. That's literally like one of my grand aunties.
Well, every event we go to, it's they're either Kazis or Catherians.
Yeah, and we're from the wrong places, mate.
Are you Catherian or Kazi? I said neither.
Yeah, yeah. Let's hope you get there first. Honestly, we'll get him down, have a chat.
Well, let us put that out into the universe, George. Wherever you are, we want you on, mate.
Bravo, Gorgara.
See, Georgie boy.
Dear, well, I'm conscious of time because we've gone probably well over what we should have. But no, George, mate, thank you so much for being here. My pleasure. The very best. Again, we're so proud of what you're doing. So proud of the portrayal, and we just know that you're going to get this next role that you're after. And we're going to be saying, mate, we knew him way before, right? You're already there, but
You are.
We just know that it's going to go to the next level. So thank you very much for being here.
Yeah. My pleasure. Thank you for having me on. And thanks for the drink and the mezes. They were brilliant.
No worries.
Yeah, love what you guys are doing. Keep it up. And I'm proud of you guys as well.
Thanks, mate.
Thank you, George.
We'll get you in touch with the Greek provador as well.
Beautiful. to the joy of many of my castmates, I'm sure.
Yeah, well, we're sure that they'll enjoy it.
Good Nick. Stuff, mate. Mate, Tom, another awesome episode. How good was that?
Fantastic.
Eh? Another fantastic legend in the house, eh?
Yep. Amazing actor. A legend from our own backyard, which is always a plus.
Exactly. We breed good people around here, don't we?
We do.
Very talented people. Mate.
Southeastern suburbs, the southern suburbs as well. We're doing okay.
Just don't throw away from Brighton. Is Brighton the hub? I don't know.
Maybe. Maybe. Yeah.
No, it's either Brighton, Marrickville or Kingsford. Earlwood. Yeah.
Oh, there's great Greek communities everywhere around here. Brighton, Kingsford, Earlwood, Marrickville. It's, take your pick.
That's it. Good stuff, mate.
All right, mate. Well, let's
wrap it up.
UzoTalk@outlook.com is the email. Follow us on social media at UzoTalk or at Uzo_talk on Instagram.
Brilliant.
Nick Athanasiou, thank you very much, mate.
Tom, thank you. And anyone out there, if you love our show, give us a 5-star rating on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. It really helps us out. So
it really does. Thanks for everyone. Much, guys.
Take care. Bye.
Ακολουθήστε μας στο Soundees, στο Spotify, στο Apple Podcasts και στο Google Podcasts.